Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycon, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Better late than never. It's the Monday edition of Head On. I'm Bob, and I'm 3 minutes late. But you know what? I'm glad to be here. And why am I late? Hey, you're late. Why are you late? Well, the fact of the matter is, we just walked in the door. I mean, just walked in the door. I had forgotten about it, but today was Take Margie to Camp Day, and so we went down to Charleston and dropped her off for the Democratic Youth Leadership Academy. She'll be there for a few days, and she'll get some good political rah-rah going on. That's her second year there. And I think overall it's a positive for her. Coming back up the mountain, we heard weird noises coming out of the truck, which we could not immediately identify or diagnose. So that will be something that we get to dig into at some point later in time. But anyway, that's why we're a couple of minutes late getting into the room. What's on your mind today? I know what's on mine. I know where I want to start this. And frankly, it's gonna take a little help from you because I've been on the road for the last handful of hours, and I know what is sort of under my what the burr is under my bonnet, or the bee under my bonnet, the burr under my saddle. I know what those are. The question is, what about you? What is on your mind? And you are welcome to bring anything along that you wish. But I want to start with a couple of things that I did not get to last week, and it's gonna take a minute or so, just a second to find it, and hopefully it'll pop right up here. I want to share. I want to share with you an email that came from our buddy Scott in Sweden with regarding healthcare, and I'm going to have to search for it again. It'll take just a second. He wrote a letter, Scott did, regarding health care. You know, Scott, as noted, lives in Sweden. He is American by birth. He is, similar to several other of our listeners, an expatriate American. An American who loves his country, but just doesn't feel like he can live here right now. And in the course of one of our conversations about healthcare, Scott responded by copying me in a, on a letter that he sent to his former senators in Kansas. And this particular letter is addressed to Senator Brownback. And he, like I said, he copied me and he says, "Hi, Bob. Well, you inspired me again to write my senators, and what a pair they are, Brownback and Roberts. While not exactly Cheney's flying monkeys, they are his winkies. You know, the green-faced castle guards with the seven barbed spears who cornered the Dorothy gang on the castle battlements. Yes, and one of whom was Buddy Ebsen. Wasn't he the lead winky? Isn't he the one who hollers, 'All hail Dorothy,' at some point? Because he was supposed to play the Tin Man, but the magic, makeup reacted with his skin, and therefore, but anyway. But this is what Scott sent along to Senators Roberts and Brownback. And I think you're going to appreciate it. Scott writes, "As an aging expat Kansan living in Sweden, I have more experience than I would prefer to have with any healthcare delivery system. Yet, thank God it's the Swedish universal coverage single-payer insurance system and not that chaotic roulette wheel system back in the U.S. where the house always wins. Our system has only a 2.5% administrative overhead, while the U.S. averages 30%. There is no pre-existing condition nonsense here, the purpose of which is to deny care to the sick and needy. Our treatment outcomes are among the best in the world and are provided at about half the cost to the patient society. No one is driven to personal bankruptcy due to catastrophic health costs, and no one puts off early disease detection treatment due to lack of means. There are no waiting lists for acute care and reasonably short waiting lists for elective or non-acute care. Pharmaceuticals and medical products are contractually purchased in bulk, which lowers their cost. Generic substitution is encouraged, but the patient has the final choice. In short, the Swedes have had this system since around World War II and have fine-tuned it quite well to be low-cost, but efficient and innovative. As I approach my 60s, I would never even consider returning to the U.S. because of how patient-unfriendly U.S. medical insurance is. By all appearances, the U.S. insurance and medical care system is primarily about bottom-line corporate profit, with actual medical care delivery secondary to that, whereas here, good medical care is seen as a basic human right, and it is society as a, has an, and it is society as a whole, the common weal, who profits from early interventions and high-quality care. When all its citizens have access to wellness, high productivity is another of the outcomes. The U.S. system leaves a lot of sick, used-up, unproductive people in its wake, as U.S. insurers see little way to make enough money off their low-income situation." I still listen to U.S. radio over the Internet, and almost everything I have heard from the GOP and their water carriers, like Limbaugh, about European health care is misinformation and gross distortion. As an experienced professional translator, I have a fairly deep familiarity with these systems. The cleft between reality and what U.S. conservative think tanks and the true believers say is a sad testimony to ideology's power to blind. Thus, I urge the Kansas congressional delegation to visit Scandinavia, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Finland, and even Germany and France, to study what is being done here and how our treatment outcomes, our actual cost and financing structures, to generally see for themselves. And if they can come with an open mind and leave their ideological blinders and campaign contributors list behind at the Washington airport, so much the better. With best regards, Scott." I opened the program with that because I did not share it with you on Friday. It arrived early Friday morning. And sometimes we just get going at such a raucous clip that I don't have time to share everything with you that I would like to. But I wanted to make sure you heard that. Because, see, that's reality. That's not the made-up, bogus, phonied-up, dummied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, ginned-up, carnival midway nightmare scenario garbage that multi-millionaire multi-billionaire corporations are pumping into the airwaves on a daily basis now, trying to terrorize the American people into thinking that there's a 5-week waiting list electroshock paddles in the case that you go code blue and your heart stops. Let's see, we'll start his heart I'll tell you what, we'll start his heart in about 5 weeks. Will that work for you? I think we'll fix his heart in about 5 weeks. If he's still alive, that'd be just great. You betcha. No! Because, you see, what they're doing now is lying. And I heard more of it because, of course, you know the drill. The only thing on the air here where I live is right-wing dreck and drivel, led particularly as one heads down the mountain toward Charleston by the junkie-issimus, the junkie of all junkies, Flush Flimball, who was screaming today. Oh, what was it? How did he put it? Rationing. My friends, the health care rationing will be unbearable in this country if Obamacare is given its way. And of course, the federal government will have to pay for abortions, my friends, because if the only place you can get an abortion, if Obamacare is all we have, then the federal government will of necessity have to pay for abortions. What will we do when science finally identifies the gene for homosexuality? Suddenly those liberals in the homosexual community will become the biggest pro-life marchers of all. What happens when medical science says, oh, well, it looks like you're going to have a red-haired, freckled baby who's going to be fat, and mommy and daddy say, well, we'll just abort this one. The government will pay for it. That's not even a remotely honest attempt at dialogue over this issue that has so much to do with the well-being and, in fact, the future of our country. I'm sick to death of it. Because I am energized by red meat. No, I don't mean literally, I mean metaphorically. And President Barack Obama, President Not Sure, as he has been referred to from time to time on this program. Not sure. No. Made reference to some of Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina's the comments the other day. He was caught live. I mean, you can hear him saying it. If we can stop health care, if we can make this healthcare thing fail, then it will be Obama's Waterloo and we will have destroyed him. That's what Jim DeMint said. And Obama took that up today, not quoting DeMint by name, but noting that DeMint had said those things and responded, it's not about me, it's about a broken healthcare system that we've got to fix before it destroys any more American families. And maybe that's the subtle political jujitsu that he plays. But maybe it's time to get mad. Maybe it's time to get outright cranky. Can you imagine
This is where they live. Now, bear in mind, George Bush started a war of his own choosing in Iraq and Afghanistan. Did the Democrats stand up and say, listen, if we just hold back the money, George will fail. And it will be his Waterloo, and he will be destroyed. Oh, no! No, not us Democrats. Oh, heck no! We got the checkbook out and said, George, how much would you like for your war? Don't look at us meanly now. You just tell us how much you want for this war you chose to wage, and we'll write the check, George. And George snickered up his sleeve and said, and Dick Cheney looked at him and said, whatever it is that you think you want, tell them three times as much and they'll give you five times as much. And that's what happened. Oh, no, the Democrats didn't sit there and play politics with the war. We funded it. Those of us who were against the war and remain against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, who are trying to forestall the next one, wherever it may be, we were fit to be tied. We wrote letters. We picked up the phone. We called Congress. We called senators, we called members of the House, we called governors, we called local leaders, we begged, we pleaded, stop this insanity, turn off the spigot. Patriots and heroes like Dennis Kucinich stood up in the House of Representatives and said, we have got to stop the flow of the money now. Guess what? The money never stopped flowing. It has beggared us. It has paupered our children. It has driven to penury our grandchildren. And it may well prove to be the financial ruination of generations as yet unborn and undreamt of. But the Democrats in Congress said, here, take some more money for the war. We don't want anyone saying that we wanted you to fail or anything. Please take some money, George. Oh, don't look at us that way, George. We hate it. We're going to cry. Yeah. On the other hand, you have the Republican Party, which would gladly burn this country to ashes if it thought it could reap some political gain from it. And they don't mind being caught out in the open saying so. They don't give a damn about American families. They don't give a damn about families losing their homes. They don't give a damn about families being driven into bankruptcy. They don't care about families that lose mothers and fathers and children to this avarice-driven healthcare system we have now. They don't care. The one thing they care about is political machination, political payback, political gain. And they have one goal. And they will sacrifice you, your loved ones, your neighbors, strangers on the street. There is no one save themselves that they are not willing to sacrifice if they think it will destroy Barack Obama because they're tired of having that one in the White House and they just wish somebody would do something about it. And so when I see a letter like Scott's come in that so cogently lays out what a stinking lie the right wing is pawning off on this country, I can't help but share it with you. So that's part of the program this evening. And let's see, something else. A disturbing story. that I hope we will get to at some point. This pathetic story of the young man in Afghanistan. Heartrending, heartbreaking. His name is Bo Bergdahl. He's from Idaho. And I think it would behoove us to talk about his case this evening. And I hope you are thinking of his parents. And about the hell that they are going through. The hell that they have been put in by this government. The hell that they're put through by people like the official POS, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. Who declared that Private Bergdahl is an apparent deserter, is collaborating with the enemy, that he is a liar, and that the Taliban should kill him. And yet there is nothing, nothing that will drive the advertisers away from Fox. I have seen the video footage. You'll hear the audio later. And the one thing that was apparent to me is that Private Bergdahl looked like he was in a heck of a lot better shape for having been in the hands of the Taliban than any prisoner has been who has been within the clutches of our tender mercies at Guantanamo. Just saying. So that's a couple of jumping off points for the program this evening. And where you wish to go is up to you as well. Everything's wide open. So pick your topic, pick up the phone, and ring in. Looking forward to hear from you. You know the number 877-443-2366, 877-4 head on. Let's see what's going on the telephone lines here. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Welcome to the program.
It's Jude from Seattle.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Well, it's been interesting, perfect segue. I was calling because of Private First Class Bergdahl.
Yes.
You opened up that forum perfectly. How are you doing?
I'm a little scatterbrained right now. You know, it's always kind of tough to just blow right into the door and jump into the chair and have at it, but I couldn't quite stand to play hooky tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm grateful for that. The movement that I started here in Seattle, Women Standing, where we carry black combat boots and white flowers.
Yes.
I try to contact as many families as I can, although it's difficult to, locate them because of different names and such. But when I pulled up this one today, it just made me, in fact, I still have an extraordinary amount of tears. I remember back when my son went and enlisted in the Navy and ended up in Desert Storm. And he was with the, since he was a medic, he was the second to go in, out of Kuwait. And I talk about terror because I knew so little. I was so busy raising children and, you know, being married and working. And I was just left with this horrible fear because of Ramadan coming up and not being, you know, schooled enough to be able to rationally look and find out that it wasn't anything that was going to destroy my son. And at that time, it was, I think it was one of the first wars that was just nonstop on the television. And,
yes.
And it was just, you know, those weeks were...
Oh, I remember. I couldn't get away from the television. I couldn't stand it. And, of course, broad daylight was 3 o'clock in the morning here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, in the truest sense of the word, I was mesmerized by it.
Mm-hmm. It was, it's odd. You know, I look back now and I think of, what was that? What, you know, why would I sit and want to be able to listen about Scud missiles, you know, going in and all of that? And yet the attachment was somehow... there was a connection that I felt that I could able to, you know, touch my son's hand or embrace him in my arms through, you know, all of those photos. And somehow some kind of solace would be given to me. But today I went back there after I saw that piece with that shameful, in fact, they called Fox, which they probably won't give a rat's ass, but can I say ass? Sorry.
Anytime you want. Absolutely.
Okay. You know, about... what a family would go through, or what a, you know, what a soldier, what a blatant betrayal. I mean, it's one more acknowledgement that we are so beyond the pale, so beyond it. So what I try to do when I get into those moments that I know that somehow I feel absolutely powerless, I ended up getting a hold of the Sheriff's Department in Haley, Idaho, and that spokesman that had been speaking out for the family, that head sheriff. Although I didn't speak with him personally, the woman who answered the phone at the Sheriff's Department was extremely gracious to me. And she had not heard anything about the presentation that had been presented on Fox News, you know, the propaganda. And she was stunned because she didn't have a response. And I said, I very much would like to ask you. I said, I'd like to send a letter to the family. And I will, you know, keep the letter open so that you can assess it, to read it to make sure that there's nothing negative in there. I just said, and then I said, I don't want to keep you. And she said, no, no, go on. So I got their address, and then I ended up emailing that particular sheriff, and I sent him the video off of Crooks and Liars so that he could see personally, and also, you know, put a small piece in there that I found it beyond shocking, but that I thanked him for the, you know, the service that he was doing, you know, for the community. And kind of gently reminded him, you know, the oath that everyone takes. I mean, there has to be a word protect in there. And I wanted just to give that into the hands of people, maybe somehow, to make some kind of larger statement. So I am not a caller into programs, but I felt very comfortable after Mike had introduced you.
You're doing fine so far, if I may say so myself.
Well, I mean, the work that you do for the coal, you know, to try to bring that awareness. It's, you know, so often I have people come up to me when I'm doing a stand and want to know if they're brave, they will come up because often they think I've lost someone. And, you know, I would just remind them that I'm just standing there to honor all that have been killed and then for the intention of peace. And I had a young fellow come up one day and he said, why do you do this? And I said, because it's the only thing that keeps me sane. I said, part of it maybe sounds like I'm extremely selfish. But Women Standing started 3 years ago this August, and because there was so rare footage or photos of anything going on in Iraq, there happened to come across the New York Times a picture of the conflict between Israel and Lebanon, and the photo was of all you could see was a mother's arms around a small infant box, and they were being dug out under all this concrete masses of this, you know, and building structure.
I remember that photograph.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's on my wall. I have a collage of everything that is going on, and then I have a map of the world. And I always make sure that I look where it's at, and that becomes my intention, you know, to help align with people like yourself and your family and your callers and so many of us to help raise awareness and raise that critical mass. Because it just takes a little from us, but collectively we can do so much. Well, after I saw that photo, I ended up, I left the house and I went out and I grabbed a gal that I knew that worked in one of the shops here in Seattle, and I said, you have to go with me. And we drove and we found this bridge. It's an overpass on the I-5, which is the main corridor up in the part of Washington here. And we stood with white flowers, and that became a movement that for a period of time was just every Sunday. And then after the Sundays, I did that probably for six months, and mostly I did it alone or with my, at the time, 9-year-old granddaughter. And we would just stand and face a certain direction. But after a while, there would be so many police officers that would come up, and they'd always broach me from the same vantage point. One would come from my right, the other would kind of gently come from the left, thinking that I probably was going to jump because people had called in and saw me with the white flowers and assuming I was a suicide. And I would turn to them and explain what was going on, and every single one of them was extremely kind to me and reminded me I had a right to do that. But I ended up leaving there, and I started standing down at different, at the federal building or a police station or anywhere, and that's when the black combat boots came in. So to have seen that, it's almost like we need to create new adjectives, because I don't know anymore to be able to define of what this propaganda movement, truly people that do not respect and love this country, nor the service people that are supporting and giving everything they have. So that's kind of my.
And this has been, and this has been 3 years now, right?
3 years. I think it's the 9th of August.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Every single day, wherever I go, I have the black combat boots and flowers over my shoulders. And there have been other individuals that have done the same. Some just hold flowers. I have not really connected with anyone that has combat boots, but it makes no difference. You know, it's. The boots themselves, when I put them over my shoulders, it's like I am so protected. I don't know who wore these, but they were some extraordinary person because they're very, besides being heavy, they really have their own sense of presence. And I have never been afraid. And if I may, I kind of jumped ahead. That young man asked me why I was doing that. And he says, and after I had explained it, he says, well, you know, that's not going to make any difference. Let me ask you something. When was the last time you stood 25 feet from the front door of the federal building and just stood there, for me, just with the boots and flowers, and for you, maybe just without anything, and just stood there with your eyes closed for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, and just allowed yourself to be in the presence of what's going on? And he looked and said, well, I don't know what to respond to that. And I said, well, it's just not an idle question I ask you. Before you start assuming something's crazy about that, try it. Maybe it's something that you'll be empowered by.
It'll stop feeling so crazy and start feeling a little bit more like a reality that you had not known existed.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And with that, it comes tremendous insight into being able to know what to discern to, at least for myself, what issues are important that I take on. Because I do those wholeheartedly. And it's all of us individuals never assuming that what we do may seem so minuscule that it's unimportant. It's extremely important because maybe that's what we're put here for.
But you see, Jude, I don't, just because of the scope of life within the universe, I don't believe that anything that any human being does that yields some degree of meaning and goodness can ever be ruled obscure, because you and I, if you look at any of us, if we look at the universe and the scale and scope of it, you know, I think it may be before you tuned in at Mike's recommendation, but I was, you know, I was talking one night about, you know, just how obscure we are. And it all, you know, I had this transformative moment when I saw the text that Carl Sagan put with that. I don't know if you've ever seen it, that photograph of the pale blue dot.
No, I haven't.
Just look up pale blue dot on the internet, and it will. It was life changing for me. Because I suddenly realized that if I'm lucky, given the size and scope of the universe, if I'm lucky, I am one chemical that's part of a peptide chain on some gene that is a strand of DNA that winds up being Almighty God's toenail. Okay? That, you know, some of us might be armpit hairs. Other of us might be. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so.
I made that in reference to how maybe some view that, because too many people see themselves as being inept, unable to make change, and that drives me crazy. I look at them and I say, do you realize that first of all you're alive? And I'm not saying it's you, but reminding people, you are alive. You have great possibility within inside. And it doesn't make any difference how small it might seem, but collectively, like one of the emails I sent to you was about our piece in this critical mass. You have no idea when that thought comes that that will lift it up to make a change. And that's extraordinarily empowering for people. You know, and it becomes like this mantra that I just find, you know, myself having to, I mean, here I am in this you know, my house and my garden and, you know, and the boots sitting there in the front. Because I always, if I'm not walking with them, they're always on the sidewalk in front of my apartment.
And so, you know, the question immediately occurs to me, if someone says, well, you know, you're not going to do anything by doing that, it seems like the appropriate response is, and what are you doing by doing nothing?
Well, that's a very good thought. I have not broached that.
There is a gulf between something and nothing, and without seeming terribly, terribly shallow, it's because of my Southern upbringing. I remember I've heard members of, you know, old alumnus of the team say that they played on a football team, and on the wall of the locker room was a sign that just said, make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not doing anything, you're not making anything happen. On the other hand, no matter what anyone else may think of what your effort is, by the simple act of making it, you're making something happen. And you and I don't get to choose whose lives we change. All we can do is do and hope that we do bring about that change.
Mm-hmm.
And I know by virtue of the emails I've seen and things that I've heard and things that have been said to me on this program, that apparently lives have been changed. And I never set out to do that kind of thing, and I don't want to be that kind of a torchbearer, but I also, it's hard to avoid when it's in you and it's in the situation. And I think that sounds like something that you came to a realization of, Jude, and that is, you know, there's that old Roman saying that for fear of failing, he sat still.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sitting still, for many of us and for you, is not acceptable because you have a very well-developed sense of personal, not responsibility, but accountability.
Absolutely. You know, there's times, Bob, that I'll wake up during the night, and I'm not saying that I literally, it's not a delusional thing, but I can almost sense the sobs of mothers. You know, and I'll take that time and I'll set up, and it just becomes a contemplative period, where I just align with whatever's going on. I have women, mothers and sisters, who have given me names of their, some are, you know, Indian soldiers. I mean, just from all over the world. Someone from Yemen that I state, and they'll write the name down and they go in the boot, you know, to honor. Because we're all humanity. You know, all of it becomes, you know, my brother might have different colors somewhere else in the world, and I was just very grateful to find you. And like I had shared so many times in my writings to you, that it takes a while sometimes for individuals to be able to lean into dialogue. It's so hard to be given just maybe 10 seconds to 20 seconds. And I know that you have a unique forum because it's somehow it's, you know, they talk about being supported by all of us, which I haven't been able to donate yet, but it will come. But that for people to have, like myself, the time to sit and allow all of that thought process to have its own life, to be able to come out and listen to you, that is very good, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, it is my pleasure, and it's my honor. And, you know, it all came about, Jude, as a function of having listened, because, you know, there's nothing on the airwaves around here but right-wing radio. And 99% of it is, hey, that's great. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me. And an idle question from a caller can yield 30 minutes of pontificating. And I can't stand that. And I also sensed that would never work. That would never work for our side. And you and the rest of the Horn family who call in, prove that to me, because you have so much to say, and it would be something approaching criminal for me to just say, well, okay, you've had your minute and a half, bye bye now, and launch off into some ego driven tirade of my own, because. Just as you say that you feel like you're connecting remotely as a result of what you've done with Women's Standing, the same thing happens to me in actuality with the voices and the stories of the folks who share their time with this program, because I can't be in Australia like John Fox is. But John Fox can be my eyes and ears in Australia, and I can be his in Appalachia. I can't be in Wisconsin like Albert is. I can't be in Tennessee like David is, or in the Great Northwest like you and Susan and Jean and Diana and so many others and Cindy. I can't be in Massachusetts with Patrick and Scott and Bob Lottie. But we can all be each other's eyes and ears. But there has to be enough time within that format for us to get across what the eyes and the ears are seeing and hearing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the heart and soul of this. And I'm so glad when I hear from you and others that this works for you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and again, you know, grateful to Ben Birch to be able to, you know, patch us all in together.
Oh, heavens, yes.
One of the things, Bob, that started about, I don't know, I don't know, because I've lost track of time. I was doing a stand one day, and there was a lot of distractions going on. I was down at the federal building, and I was facing west, and I stand next to this huge pole with an enormous, you know, flag on it, and I was trying to find a way in which to kind of center myself and such, and I had remembered. Have you been to an IMAX theater when it's in the round and how huge? You know, it's like a 60-foot screen.
Yes.
Well, they had photos of, I remember seeing one of the astronauts taking a picture of the Earth. And for some reason, that popped into my mind. And I ended up visualizing myself above the Earth, which in itself was like extremely powerful. Because I had been looking into the Chandra X-ray Observatory that's like 38,000 miles above the Earth. And
mm-hmm.
Really a beautiful thing to get into. And so I started doing my meditation time there, and then within a matter of days, I ended up would back myself up to the what I would comprehend as the very edge of the solar system, which, and I can't go beyond that because I have a sense that my mind would, like, flip somewhere else. And that's now where I stand. And then looking down on the Earth and envisioning, I mean, it's like I wrap the whole Earth up. And it's so still, and so beautiful, and so beyond comprehension. And then when I come out, and then just to walk around and have to come back in, I don't know where we're going, but I do know that we are going in a direction that is going to make some changes. And I don't know if that means standard barricades or, you know, I have no comprehension. But there are so many people that are really, truly awake right now. And actively seeking something that is good. You brought up earlier the word well-being.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, as families, how that's so extraordinarily important that we have a well-being group of people that we will give and do anything for them to create harmony and peace and protectiveness, and then to slowly start coming out of that. For me, it's really looking at, you know, at the earth, and not that I can make all the changes, but for that period of time, it's been very good, and it's kept my sanity. It's kept my sanity, and it's kept me very humble, but it's kept me powerfully pissed off at times also to fight for the things that need to be changed. It's like calling, you know, my senators, Murray and Catwell, over the Clean Air Act and aligning with coal mining. I'd forgotten about that, Bob, until you brought that up again. There were so many other issues going on. Well, that's...
And the issues themselves can be overwhelming, but if we take them one at a time and we make conscious choices not to be overwhelmed and we do reach out as is going on here, and we draw common energy from each other, we can be unoverwhelmed, I guess, if that's a word. But
it's worth it, you know, it's worth a try. You know, it's the best thing I can find.
Well, and frankly, you know, once the awakening takes place, you can't go back to sleep. You cannot roll back over and just start snoring again. And the reality television, or even news presented by television, is utterly unsatisfactory. We want to dig deeper. We want to know more. You know, whether it's because we know what television and for-profit media will give to us. You know, they'll
be tired of Lieutenant Colonel Peters.
Yes, they'll give you Lieutenant Colonel Peters. Congratulations. Let's take him out and shoot him. Not Peters, you know, but what kind of pathetic excuse for an assemblage of DNA that remotely resembles human is someone who, knowing that parents are out there watching and waiting and wondering and worrying, would give utterance to such vile putrescence? Well, the answer to that question is somebody appearing on Fox. Because that is why Fox exists. Fox exists for political gain at all costs. And we are all just either potential consumer, commercial consumers to them, or we are the shock troops to be marshaled and given our marching orders in the culture wars. And I, for one, refuse to participate. I didn't spend any more time Friday evening save the bare mention that Walter Cronkite had passed on. And there is so much more to be said there. You could make a very cogent argument that Walter Cronkite was the last of the great ones, who at least tried to be honest in what he did. There's no honesty in Charlie Gibson or Katie Couric or Brian Williams. There's marketing there, and I have no stomach for marketing.
No matter how many pleas or calls are writing in about the fairness doctrine, you know, it's like something that when it's said, I visualize people hearing it, and it's a mass laying below, and they just step over it, those that can make the changes. But it's still, one has to continue to, I can't imagine not having to call or do the letters. I mean, that just simply has to be done, along with everything else, at least for myself. But that piece today literally brought me back, and that, you know, anger is such a powerful motivator when it's pure anger and not because of something that someone is just, you know, a life that's not defined that allows anger to give it some kind of reality check that maybe it's alive. You know, that anger moves us into action. So I embrace it. I'm not afraid of it anymore. And sometimes I have to keep it under wraps, especially if I've done a stand that I've had some, not necessarily confrontation, but something has triggered something inside of me or an awareness. I have to be very, very disciplined about my response. And because once something's out, it's out. You know, it's like, you know, I remember my parents saying, if you don't have anything nice to say, keep your mouth closed. Don't say anything. just leave it be. And I think of, you know, Peter, if that family ever would contact him, one would think that there would be extraordinary shame. See, more than likely there wouldn't be, because there's almost like a quality of non-humanness. I've, you know, been a retired hospice nurse. I've done many, many deaths in my life. And it's always been very curious to watch those that have issues that they have never taken, you know, care of, because people do not necessarily go gently into the night.
No, they don't.
I would never wish for someone to have anything that's difficult, because that's not the path I want to take, but somehow life seems to be able to give out its own kind of correcting. I don't know how life will deal with the magnitude of all of this thought. The death and the torture and
Nor do I. And all you can do is be there and try to absorb it as it happens. And learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
No, you mentioned, I can never hear the word hospice without thinking of my father, because my father passed in a hospice house. And that the end of life will be with me to the end of mine. And it does not leave. And yet all the decent people who tried to make it as decent for him and for the rest of us are forever heroes and friends of mine. But the other thing that I remember in my grief when I found him was looking at him and saying, you showed me how. If you can do it, if my dad can do it, I can too. And I hope that I take some of that with me whenever that time is and that time comes. And that it's a very, very heavy topic, and it's not one to be considered lightly. But even, you know, even my son at 13 is becoming aware of the circumstances and surroundings of his life. And he asks questions about that, and you have to be honest with people. And the best thing I've come up with so far is that, you know, is to tell him, look, son, you have no memory of your birth, but you were traumatized by it. Every single human being born onto this planet suffers some degree of birth trauma because it is a traumatic experience. But you were okay that you were okay afterward, and all I can tell you is that that's the same way. It's all just birth. It's all just birth. And that may I don't know if it helped him or not, but it helped me to tell him that.
I think just having to be able to have a parent or adult or a friend be able to take time just to respond to the question of a child is extremely important. So often there, I have an apartment house that's kind of a transitional place across from me here, and they're given 3 months to live, and just the sadness is out of broken families and the police, you know, visiting staff and, you know, trying to talk to the children. It's always a reminder that whenever I see families, like how your caller on Friday talked about the analogy between the ants and the bees,
mm-hmm.
and how they collectively work together, you know, to really make that work. You know, when I'm actually present to the fracturing of people, although I can't go in and necessarily, you know, fix that. I mean, I know that. I mean, it's so painful. You know, so painful. And then when I encounter someone, you know, from that area, whether or not they're open to, you know, anything. I mean, I just look at the children. And, you know, they're fortunate to have you and your wife, Agnes. But Bob, I don't want to take any more time, because you have.
But it's been a wonderful conversation, Jude, and I hope you having passed through this moment will not hesitate to avail yourself of another one sometime soon.
Well, I actually felt like I think it was just you and I talking. And that's pretty cool.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So, take care, Jude.
Be well.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Peace. I love those little moments here on the horn. And my goodness, you've lit up all six. And all we can do is go forward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, wait, wrong button. There you are.
Yes, it's me.
Ah, Reverbo?
Yeah, you see, that's why you should never make lists. You're always going to forget somebody.
Well, see, yeah, and I got your email, and I got about five others.
You should, yeah, but it's just like it's the Oscars, you know. Well, you know, I'd like to thank my cousin Larry, who really felt that Die Hard 12 was going to be the biggest Die Hard of all. Well, except you're forgetting now, you know, Uncle Leo. It's just, it doesn't work.
No, I know. And I get in trouble every time I do it.
You can't, you just can't do it. But you mentioned, yeah, we're starting off on a fairly heavy, some heavy notes here. And
been a heavy weekend, though.
Yeah, God, I watched that movie. You sent me the link to the Blackberry Hill movie.
Blackberry Mine War, yes.
Blackberry Mine War thing, and yes, that was a really heavy thing to watch, too. And you're talking about just what kind of a waste of DNA would make these comments like they do on Fox. Well, it's the same people that would write the words, kill them all, and let God sort it out.
Yeah, and just as backstory, I sent that film link along also to ELO, our the den mother of the chat room and videographer and so much more to the horn. And I know she watched it, and I know several other people that I sent along to watched it. At some point, it may go on. It may go onto the website for anyone to avail themselves of. What was it? 25 minutes or so?
Yeah.
It was as I sat there watching it on a Friday evening. It was 25 minutes that felt like 25 hours.
Yeah, it was not comfortable. You're not comfortable watching this.
It was squirmish.
I wrote you up. Kind of a review of it, but you've been out and about, so you'll get it.
No, I've already. I did see it. I did see it, and I don't.
Boy, that guy. How does he speak without moving his lips?
Don Blankenship.
It is scary what that guy.
He missed. Apparently, if he had a sense of humor, or I don't know, dare I say it, a shred of humanity about him. He missed a great calling as a ventriloquist.
I know. It's uncanny.
And what this film is, just as backstory for everybody, it's a film about a labor uprising in the 80s on the Kentucky-West Virginia border, in which Massey Energy, who, by the way, as is noted in the film, was owned by a parent company that used slave labor in South Africa for its mining interests there. It's about Massey Energy's attempts to break the United Mine Workers of America.
And they wish they could have South Africa right here in West Virginia.
Oh yeah, well see, this past weekend.
They're pretty upfront about it.
Oh yeah, they didn't blush. This right. past weekend, the Friends of Coal rallied down at the Culture Center in Charleston. In opposition to the what they call the cap and tax bill.
Really?
Yeah. And they brought former West Virginia University head football coach Don Nealon, who is a friend of Cole.
Yeah.
He said, and he came down and said, gosh darn it, I don't know anything about mining coal, but I know I'm a friend of it.
Well, of course you are, Don.
And I don't want these $3,000 a year extra power bills that I'm going to get if they pass this cap and tax bill.
Oh, you just have to shudder.
Well, you do, because this is also the, and I only went, I was reminded of this because of you mentioning South Africa and wanting South Africa in the southern coal fields of West Virginia, which they did, which they've largely got at this point. Because a couple of years ago, Don Nealon came out as a friend of coal, and he said, I don't know nothing about mining coal, but I do know we'd be able to mine it a lot more cheaply if we could get some of these regulations out of the way and mine it like they do in China. You know, where they have 10 to 15,000 coal mining deaths per year.
How difficult do you think was that for him to read? Do you think he got that in one take?
No, the sad thing is he made that up on his own, because then the Friends of Coal had a lot of scurrying backwards to do to cover, you know, well, no, we don't want to be like the communist Chinese, but, you know, Don's a great football coach.
Right, but we do want to be like the South Africans. That's okay.
Yeah, South Africa's cool.
right, that's fine. Oh, God. Yeah, I didn't know that that film existed, really. I had never heard of that before.
I hadn't either. And I sat down to watch it, and I just sat there in... Well, and of course, you know, it's like watching a movie about the Civil War, because you know how it ends. Because the movie ends, and the next thing you know, Massey Energy has broken the Union. The Union becomes a pale and pathetic shadow of itself, starts admitting mountain removers to its ranks, and thereby shaming all the underground miners who fought and bled and died to create that Union. And Massey goes on to start blowing up Appalachia. And Don Blankenship just gets bigger and bigger, and his comb over gets thinner and thinner.
And his face breaks out more too. This doesn't really affect him well, it seems like, except in the wallet.
And he winds up on the French Riviera, swanning around with a justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court that costs that West Virginia justice his election, but in the meantime buys a seat for another crony on the court.
Yeah, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah. And by the way, just to let you know, it was a big, fun weekend this weekend in southern West Virginia, Reverbo.
No, let's tell us.
Down Beckley way, they had the Friends of Coal Auto Fair 2009.
And pistol shootout, I hope.
You never know. You just never know.
You bring your pistol.
But wait. This is speaking of bringing pistols. This is almost better than bring your gun to church day, okay? Because my congressman, Nick Rahal, who occasionally does the right thing on a lot of stuff, but if the word coal is involved, you can guarantee he's going to get it wrong. Nick Rahal, who in the recent past has cashed a $5,000 check from the Coal Miners PAC, cashed a $2,000 check from the Arch Coal PAC, cashed a $5,000 check from the American Electric Power PAC, a $2,500 check from the Consol Energy PAC, those are the fine folks that are blowing up my home, and $1,000 each from the Dominion Resources and Allegheny Energy PAC. So that's the $2,000, that's $4,500, $9,500, $11,500,
$16,500. Sweet. Man, you and I are in the wrong business.
Oh, I got to get a better racket. But anyway, but that's what he's done lately. But what he done this weekend, he done. It's time for me to move to where they speak English. What he did this weekend, Reverbo.
I'm sorry.
The Friends of Coal Auto Fair 2009 featured a Nick Rahal affirmation of the importance of coal. God, that almost sounds like some sort of religious rite, doesn't it?
I'm not sure I'm worthy of this.
But wait, there's more.
Good.
He issued a statement. I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to be invited by the Golden Knights to join them for the Friends of Coal event. It is a very special honor for me to be able to show in a bold way my continued support for not only coal, but for everyone who serves the people of West Virginia and our nation through their services in our armed forces and law enforcement agency. It is a Nick Rahal affirmation of the importance of coal, and an opportunity to pay tribute to those who extraordinarily serve and make personal sacrifices each day for the citizens of West Virginia and our nation as a whole. Okay, so that's what it was. You want to know what it was? Our buddy Maura sent this one along, and I read it as I was going to air, and it was just, you know, got the shudders. You want to know what the Nick Rahal affirmation of the importance of coal was?
You know I do.
He jumped out of an airplane.
He what? He went skydiving, you say?
Yeah. That's. I don't know how to respond to that. That's like ritual bloodletting. I mean, that's like some ancient Mayan priest dragging the maguey thorns through his tongue or something.
What do you think the symbolism of that is? I don't even understand it.
I don't either. It's his way of saying thank you.
I guess. Did he trot out all the kids, too? That's coming up next, I'm sure.
No, he pushed them out in free.
You got to mention the soldiers, and you got to jump out of airplanes and have, you know.
You know, but my question is, Congressman, did you fly over Kayford Mountain? Did you fly over Twilight or Ed White on your way to jumping out of your plane to prove your devotion to coal? I mean, this is like something out of A Man Called Horse with Richard Harris being hoisted by, you know, eagle claws in his nipples.
No, it isn't. It's like it's right out of a Kurt Vonnegut novel, and you know it. This is perfect. If it wasn't so freaking sad. Shameless.
And it just blows. And that line, it is a Nick Rahal affirmation of the importance of coal?
Yeah.
Did he jump out with coal in his pockets?
Well, how about this? I wonder if while he was drifting on down, the plane let go of the smoke machine. This would be great, and wrote like, "Hooray for coal" in the sky above him.
Yeah, usually it's "Surrender, Dorothy." That would have been a nice change.
Oh God, you guys got your hands full. That's all I can say.
I'm flabbergasted. And then the logo for this Auto Fair 2009 Friends of Coal is a souped up, looks like late 60s model Mustang, you know, white with the blue stripes. What is that, a Shelby Cobra or something? I don't know. Shelby Mustang. I don't know. I'm off my turf talking about that stuff. Somebody will call and correct. No, Bob, that's a 1967. You know, with the 32 millimeter flageplate.
It's a pony car.
It's a pony car sitting on a pile of coal.
Well, that's an awesome logo. The next thing you know, it's going to be like all you can eat dollar pancake night and Friends of Coal. It's going to be Kmart Blue Light Special. In big and tall men and Friends of Coal.
And Friends of Coal. You think you're joking, don't you? You're joking. I can't go to the Sonic drive-thru in Beckley. Not that I have any business there in the first place, but I do have a terrible weakness for chili cheese tots. I can't go through the Sonic drive-thru in Beckley without being confronted by a Friends of Coal sign. I can't sit down to a big Brutus in Applebee's without being assaulted by the Friends of Coal sign.
Yeah, I thought I was joking, but...
No!
No.
It is... Yes. You know, it's going to be the West Virginia Intergalactic Spaceport and Friends of Coal Emporium.
Yeah, that's what it'll be. The only reason I'm giggling is because... at some point, I just feel that the only true defense that I have left against this senseless world is laughter and humor. Sometimes that's all I think I have left.
If you can't laugh, you spend your life weeping and screaming.
Right. The alternative is weeping. Yeah.
But, there's some myth or metaphor out there to explain the what goes on between the ears of the Friends of Coal. I mean, what else? Friends of Zyklon B. Friends of little children who eat lead paint chips off of old ceilings.
Yeah, friends of birth defects.
Friends of smog.
Oh, sure. Friends of poisonous water. We're friends of poisonous water. Hey, how you doing? I'm Bob, and this is Rob.
And we're friends of poison water.
It's stunning. That's why you just...
And see, if I had the wherewithal, and if there were liberal environmental groups out there we would take this kind of comedy to them, and by virtue of the reducto ad absurdum, make fools of these people. Everywhere that the Friends of Cole go and set up a booth, we need to set up a, you know, something really, really obvious. Friends of Arsenic.
Well, here's what I was thinking. Yeah, that would be great, of course, yeah. Friends of Zyklon B actually is the most amusing one in you know, that way, that only a person like...
Friends of... There you go. Friends of Death... No, Friends of Death Camps.
There you go, yeah, Friends of Death Camps. Friends of Slavery. Well,
there. That's the one. Now, see, we had to process for a minute, Reverbo, but you're on it. That's it. Friends of Slavery.
Oh, it'll be too popular. It'll backfire. Or they would.
Oh, God, because we'd put up the Confederate battle flag and all the Friends of Cole would come over and hang out.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah, it's the same. Those are all the same friends. But this, I got an idea. This leads me to my, what I was thinking about the next time we spoke. And that is, here, how about this for an idea? It's still the same damn thing. It's the healthcare crap and our energy policy and our foreign policy and environmentalism. It is all the same damn thing. And what these people need to be, I think, is publicly slapped. We should have a slapping kiosk. They just need to be dragged out into the street and slapped. Of course, beyond that, what I believe is, what we're talking about here is, I am banishing you from my land and my country. My people hate you, and my God hates you, and you are never to return.
And that's where we rip the buttons off and break the sword and play the theme from Branded. And
let's see if we can do that. Branded, marked with a coward's hand.
What do you do when you're branded?
But to know you're a man. Only one man. How's it go? Only one man.
I hate what I do to you sometimes. It's really unfair. Here's one. Friends of Morons.
Well, yeah, that's perfect. But listen to what... This is the whole point of this. You have violated our highest principles. The problem is that the government, it's all, they can't, if I had it my way, that's simply it. Why are you banishing me? Why have you broken the sword over your knee and we're out of here? Well, because you have violated my highest principle here. Don't you, we have decided you are no good for us. Go, be gone and never come back.
Darken thou not our doorway no more.
Ever. I mean, that's why I want corporate death penalty. You make a political contribution, corporate death penalty. I mean, good grief, we give you all these special breaks. We give these people all these fucking special benefits.
Well, and speaking of contributions, Reverbo, forgive me, but is $16.5 a little cheap for the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee?
It's way cheap.
I mean, he's been in the Congress for something like 36 years now. $16.5?
Man, that's... Ooh.
You can't even buy half a Hummer for that, and I'm talking about the car.
I got it. I laugh when things are funny.
I know, but I watch the chat room at the same time, and somebody be out there with their LMAO emoticon going, half a Hummer, There's some really low humor. There's some really low humor in the chat room, Reverbo. It's just
not for me. I will push you to higher humor, and you know it.
Well, and I'm grateful for that. Truly, I am.
I won't let you get away with that. My point is that this is what drives me so crazy. The human beings, we have the skills, we have the advanced ability to share the world. We can arrange it. We've got the brains. There's plenty to go around. We can fix stuff when it goes wrong. Right?
That's the theory, yes.
And help nature. We can actually help nature. We when things get out of whack. And then these pigs end up calling you a tree hugger. And it's like, that's a bad thing. I'm starting to get shrill now, too, but this is the thing that drives me crazy. I was listening to this guy on... I don't know, what a much other show, Hartman, I listened to. And they were talking, they had some guy on about talking about fishing and all the fish in the ocean. And it's like, it's the same damn thing. So here's what we're going to do, see, and you go into that accent because, well, because we've covered that. Because for some reason that's where that's where it always ends up. So we're going to catch all the damn fish, and whichever ones are left over, we'll just chuck them all away. What are you, some kind of fish lover?
Fish hugger.
Myself. Yeah, this is all comes back to the same damn thing. Nobody wants to share.
Well, it's like, and you know what, it's funny to watch it, the transformation of things. It makes me kind of proud. All of a sudden, we never called ourselves tree huggers down here. Everybody that I know involved with ending mountaintop removal is concerned a hell of a lot more with the communities below the mountains than they are with the trees on top of them. No offense intended, I love trees. But it's not about the mayflies, it's about what happens when you kill them and what it foretells about the human beings a little further up the food chain. These are people who are concerned with human beings, and yet, tree huggers. And so, lo and behold, we have embraced the word tree hugger, and we are, hey, tree hugger, how you doing? I'm doing good, tree hugger. How about you? Just hugging some trees.
Sure, that great line you came up with, I don't know, some months ago about how they use our imagery against us. And now yours, and even if we didn't even come up with it ourselves, they ascribe it to us. They tar us. But this is the thing. I don't understand. So what is the alternative? We should embrace, I guess, destruction. We should embrace sickness. We should embrace poison. We should embrace death. There you go. That's it. That's it. Friends of death.
What? Oh, wow. Did you just open a door?
No, that's where else can it go?
Friends of death.
Yes, we are friends of death. All right, nice to see you. I'm Gary. This is Larry. Here, you want a cap? We brought some caps.
We brought some caps. Got a bumper sticker?
Slim Jim for you.
And we could, and you know what we could do? We could have a little smiley face with X's where its eyes are supposed to be, and a straight line across where the smile would be.
Oh God, I'm going to make this is it. This is our next fortune. If only we didn't have any principles. This is.
Damn things are more annoying. Those principles, I swear.
This is gold, my friend. Where are you guys? Who are you guys with? Oh, we're with Friends of Death. Hey, right on.
It's precious. And no, there's another one of those Bill Hicks moments. Talking about people, I've seen these abortion protesters, and they're always protesting abortion outside of abortion clinics. Get with the program, people. Go. You're worried about unborn babies dying? Go to the cemetery. Protest death.
Give a damn about people who are actually alive.
Sure.
And dying.
But the door you just opened reminded me of something. You know what happens. Daggum you.
Here come those thoughts. Which one's bubbling up now?
The Black Death.
Oh, yeah.
The bubonic plague. During that time period, there developed... And you can see it in the cathedrals and the cemeteries of the time. There developed a death cult, a sort of popular imagery of death, so that there are carvings and yada 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 of death images. You know, grim death, grim reaper. You know, the guy.
Yeah.
And he's all over the place. And that's. And it's a function of the culture in which they lived, in which death was the most prevalent thing in life. And then, of course, it gave way when the plague passed. But that's where we are now. We got congressmen courting death by jumping out of airplanes to prove their devotion to something made of things that are already dead. We got people rallying on the Capitol steps in Charleston, or on the Culture Center steps in Charleston, West Virginia, to prove their devotion to something that is poisonous and toxic. Hello, but I think we've just passed into the realm of a flippin' cult.
Oh, yeah. You got batshit crazy right-winger, you know, people running around basically shooting people here, you know, all over the place. This is now I'm scared. This is like a Stephen King scenario now. This is like...
Oh, yeah, you're into The Shining.
No, this is darkness is over the land now. Darkness has settled over the land, and Friends of Death is... If you're not a friend of death, then we may have to come get you. This is...
You know, if we sat down and applied some skull sweat to this Reverbo and came up with a whole sort of mission statement, you know, we don't have manifestos anymore. Manifestos are written by communists and Unabombers. We have mission statements.
Okay.
But we could do a whole mission statement about, you know, what it means to be a friend of death.
In a positive way.
In a positive way, yes.
Oh, man. This has been a very affirming conversation tonight I've had with you.
Aren't they always?
Well, not like this. I never realized that the death could be so alive.
Liberating.
So meaningful. And so irresistible. How soon can we get it?
Next place that the Friends of Cole set up, you want to come up, we'll sit the booth together.
This is so sad. Human beings, I thought that we had all this potential, all this ability. And I just, when this kind of crap, I mean, if it was 1309, well, all right, then that's what you get. But in 2009,
we just celebrated the 40th anniversary of having landed on the moon.
Oh, I know.
And this is where we are.
Right. We decided not to go back to the moon, but to just come back here and destroy the Earth, continue to destroy the Earth because it's A, so profitable, and B, as we all know, if you can throw a religious component into it, then we can do it gleefully.
Yeah, and our buddy Marty just wrote in with a subject line that simply says, and just how religious are the Friends of Cole? Oh, they're very religious. They loves them some coal-covered Jesus.
Oh, you bet. And by the way...
They probably got little carved coal Jesus shrines.
Oh, yeah, made out of coal. That'd be wonderful.
You know, with little, yeah, right, made out of coal, carved out of coal, with little carved lambs out of coal. Or maybe the praying hands. I've seen these things, Reverbo. You think I'm just yanking them out of thin? No, I've been to the festivals. I've been to the this and the that festival, and there's always somebody there because it's West Virginia, and we're about coal. And they've got coal carvings down the road at the state park at the little gift shop. They sell carvings made of coal. And, yes, you know the praying hands?
Uh-huh.
I've seen them carved out of coal. I have seen a bust of Jesus carved out of coal.
So how bad does it have to get before something changes? You know what? I was impressed.
But no, okay. Whoa, stop.
Okay.
You just went, and I'm not being critical. You said, how bad does it have to get before they yada yada?
Yeah.
Remember, we have talked from time to time about neo-Calvinism.
Okay, you might want to refresh my memory about that.
Well, you know, Calvinism, which features an incredibly angry invisible sky critter. Who predestines some people to be successful and wealthy and among the elect, and the other people who are poor and struggling in the world are poor and struggling because he just doesn't like them very much. Okay, so that's Calvinism. And in the neo-Calvinism, you say, how bad does it have to get before... Okay, well, imagine a mountaintop or a mountain remover's family. And it's, oh, they've been married 20 years, and that's how long, the blah, blah. And, or maybe they've been married 10. and their last little baby comes along, and it has horrible birth defects. Well, if you're a friend of Cole, you would never say, gosh, maybe working around Cole has done something terrible to me, and maybe I've brought poisons home to my wife that have possibly toxified her reproductive system so that this is the end result thereof.
What do you say instead?
God's will.
Okay, well, now we're heading down the...
No, but what I'm getting at is, and it goes back to that passage from Kurt Vonnegut that you shared with us months ago, is that it cannot get bad enough. And I say that for some significant portion of the Appalachian population, but I also say it in broad respect to the nation in general, and perhaps the world as a whole. That as long as we have something to divert ourselves, be it religion, or talking back to the television, or some dummied up, ginned up, faked up, frauded up issue like abortion.
Yeah.
Then it will never get bad enough. Because you know what? Most of the population of this region has forgotten the fact that its forebears tended to live until 90 and 95 years old if they didn't die in a slate fall in the hole. Okay?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't always this way.
It was not, but for so much of Appalachia, it was. All right? And the way you die, friends of death, the way you die is you get old and you go to the doctor one day and he tells you that you got cancer of the prostate or of the breast or of the ovaries or of the liver or of the brain or the bone. And you die a horrible, horrible, agonizing death. And it's just because God didn't like you as much as the people he didn't give the cancer to.
Ouch.
And because of the fact that, you know, when that does strike your family, you sort of look in on yourself and you sort of narrow the focus to that of your little family, you don't notice that apparently God hates your entire neighborhood because you've all got cancer. When in fact, it ain't God. It's a sleazy, slimy guy with a 50s pencil-thin mustache who doesn't move his mouth when he speaks.
Yeah, but you know that, and I know that because we... The problem is, you've got to pull yourself up out of the cold trap. And if you never do, then you're going to be victimized by them. I mean, you have to pull yourself... No one can do that part for you. You've got to get up. You got to find some options in your life.
Oh, but Lord, they will get up in your face if they look at you and say, "You're taking away my job. I got a good job. I can't go to Walmart and make the kind of money I'm working here." And you can't look at them and say, "Well, neighbor, are you telling me that you're so dumb that this is the only thing you can do in life?
And the only thing you want your children to aspire to? See, we can't do that for these people. You know what impressed me about that movie was that the union guys, as, I guess I'm going to say this, it seemed like classically and clearly uneducated as they were, they seemed to comprehend a bigger picture. They seem to have kind of a solidarity and a connection to working guys everywhere.
Yeah, and you're talking about traditional brick and mortar building. No, there's plenty of education in the coal fields.
But these guys had a big picture concept going.
Yes,
on.
They did.
You know, we're all downstream kind of thing, and they were hooked into the problems with the South African miners. And I was really, I didn't expect that. I expected, as we talked about too, that hurts your cause constantly. You just expect, who cares about a bunch of illiterate hicks? Well, nobody. But these guys seem to have a...
And they got sold so far down the river they were out of sight before anybody knew what happened.
Well, that's a shame. By the way, is there any United Mine Worker union presence in West Virginia anymore?
Oh, gosh, yeah, they're still here. They got, I think they got something on the order of maybe 700 or 1,000 mountain remover members.
Oh, so they've just been
called. So, you know, so the guys that you watched in that war on Blackberry Creek, they more or less got replaced by people who would go and talk the company position on mountain removal. And thereby the union weakened itself and made itself a sad shadow of its former brilliance. My God, it was among the first, if not the first, union in America that from its very inception was integrated, because everybody down in that hole is black. And it gladly took on the former slaves and sons and grandsons of slaves. The father of Black History Month was a man named Carter Woodson. He began his career and began to yearn for education because, yea, verily, here in Fayette County, West Virginia, he went down into the dark and the dank, and he mined coal, and he came up, and he said, there has got to be better. And he went and he created a movement for what I think he called at the time Negro History Week. And it blossomed into Black History Month.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the seeds of it were born down in some hole in Fayette County. Maybe in the New River coal fields. I don't know.
I think they respected the right things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just...
I mean, my grandfather was born in 1896... And to the extent that such a thing existed, he was born into a middle-class family. His daddy was a section boss on the C&O. And there were enough connections to line granddad up for a nice job with the newfangled telephone company.
Good for him.
And he tried it for a while, and he went back to the hole. He went back to mining coal because he loved it. And it killed him. But along the way, he became an absolute dynamo for his union local. Eighth grade education, typed, you know, probably 60 words a minute with two index fingers. And no electric typewriter, neither. You know, he's in that photograph I've talked about of the Gauley Mountain Coal Company. And so is his father-in-law. And so are all his cousin-in-laws and brothers-in-law.
Well, I feel funny about... I don't want to criticize a guy for the career he chooses.
No. It was a... No, believe me, there were unhappy people.
I don't want to be coming from that angle at all.
No.
The darkness is covering the land. You've got to figure out a way out. If you can't change it, you've got to make it better for yourself. And I don't think there's any excuse for not doing that. I mean, you can do it.
But again, just not to gainsay you, Reverbo, but to give you a sense of what you are up against, these mountain removers, for the most part, although there are exceptions, I've communicated with some of them. The mountain remover culture tells them that what they are doing is good, that it's right, that it's patriotic, and that, in fact, God loves them for it. Our buddy Marty just wrote back in and said, so ask them what their answer would be at those pearly gates, they're so religious, when they're tasked to justify their stewardship of God's earth. Well, see, in their religious vision, that is not a question God will ask them. Because they're tied up in this evangelical fundamentalism that tells them that they are to take dominion of the earth. That's why these evangelical fundamentalist faiths and denominations have come to be referred to as part of the dominionist movement. You can do anything that, and it's wholly owned subsidiary of corporate pollution.
Oh, we can pledge our devotion to you by destroying your creation. That makes, yeah. I guess that makes sense to some people. Look, it makes sense to some people. What people? The people in Brave New World? The people who were part of Test Tube 5? I'm sorry, I don't give these people a pass. This is a very tricky, situation to discuss without stepping on, inadvertently, disrespecting people. You know what I mean about this. This is a tricky one. But it's like, there's door number 5, and that door leads you out of the cold trap. You want to open it or not? And if you want to stay and fight, more power to you. If you want to give up and blow up some more mountains, well, I guess I can't. That's what you want to do. That's what you're going to do.
And see, that's the thing. You're trying to take away our jobs. No, we're trying to end this practice. If you persist in doing it, once it's been brought to an end, there's no one who's a fool in this tableau save yourself. You know that it's ending. I mean, if 20 years to the last gettable coal. And that's our plane jumping congressman saying that, Reverbo. You know, do this in remembrance of coal. That's him saying that. Now, if you know that and you've got a 20-year work life, if you're doing that and you've got more than 20 years of working ahead of you, math always gets me, you know. If you're going into mountain removal right now at 16 or 18 or 20, and you plan to retire when Americans are allowed to,
at 93,
you better count on being out of a job about halfway through your work life.
And what's that fallback position some of these boys have at that point? Hello, do you want paper or plastic with that?
Well, the Walmarts will go too. Because, see, that's the problem. This picture of an economic apocalypse has been painted for, we won't be prosperous no more if we ain't got no coal. Hey, dumbass, we're not prosperous now. We've never seen prosperity.
I don't know yet.
We've seen boom and bust, and a hell of a lot more bust than boom.
You have got your hands full. And I mean, you can, and in the back room, they're just looking at each other going, well, as long as there's just one more, stupid mountaineer, and one more dime left in everybody's pocket, I guess, come on, boys, got some more mountains to blow up.
It's that way going back to the very origins of coal in Appalachia. Okay, boys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to steal the hillbilly's land. We're going to put the rails through. And then we're going to open up the mines. Well, who's going to work them? The hillbillies. Once we steal their land, they'll have to. And here's the fun part. It's going to be easy because we ain't going to pay them in money. We're going to pay them in something called scrip. And they can only spend it at our stores. Wow, this is better than slavery. Damn straight.
Somebody was talking about how the world had kind of gone into what they referred to as kind of a reverse Fordism, reverse Henry Fordism. I'm not sure I got that exactly right, but it's the contrast between Ford deciding that he would sell more cars if he paid his workers.
Yeah, he had to be able to build a car that his workers could afford to buy and drive.
Right, and now what we've morphed into, of course, is I know what we'll do now. Now we'll just get these wages so low and we'll pay people so little that they'll be forced to eat our scraps.
Desperation is always motivational.
Well, what do they say? People revolt. They don't revolt on their back, but they sure revolt on their knees.
Yeah.
You got to try this, man. You or I are going to do this. The phone is going to ring, and one of us, I'm going to say, hello, friends of death, the Reverbo speaking.
And we've even got people out there working on it, working on the very concept. Just heard.
I want to be on the logo committee. I want to be involved in this big time.
Well, I just got one email saying, not so sure about Friends of Death. The name of your fledgling organization will push away the rube before the hook can be set. Try this one. Friends of Working Water. Here's your key starter phrase. If our water contains only water, it ain't been put to work yet. We need water with a dirty face. I'll see what I can do about fleshing this out. That's our buddy David in Tennessee.
Oh, God.
Working water. If your water's clean, it ain't working.
That's right. And it ain't patriotic, and it ain't, and Jesus doesn't love it either. So,
right.
All right, my friend, I will let you get on to some other calls.
Reverbo, thanks so much, my brother.
All right, bye.
Get to work on the logo, will you? That's our critic at large, Reverbo, calling from Possum Country. And rolling onward. Nope. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Boy, oh boy. Oh, I'll tell you, I like, personally, I like Friends of Mountains a little better. And, but, you know, Friends of Salaried Suicide might be pretty good, too, or Hourly Suicide, whatever, you know, that kind of thing, if you want to be, if you want to twist the knife a little bit. Real quick, I just kind of wanted to mention a few things. I wasn't around last week. A couple friends had birthdays and this and that during the week. So I got the grand adventure of going downtown in the bar scene, and tend not to do that too much. And, you know, once again, I was it was reflected upon me why I don't tend to do that very often. Besides, you know, I have children, and, you know, I'd rather not sit around a bunch of drunks. But anyhow.
Yeah, and it's a lot more expensive in the bar than it is in your own living room.
Exactly. And it's not as fun, you know. I don't like yelling over. I don't like losing my throat just for, you know, to say.
Yeah, or getting stuck to the floor trying to walk to the men's room. All those fun beer joint things.
Or turning around and having someone introduce you to a guy in a T-shirt. And you look at the T-shirt and you're like, that's an Obama symbol. But then there's a big red slash, you know, going through it. And it says, Obama Nation. And then the guy says, yeah, have him turn around, right? And he turns around, and it's just one of these things with these right-wingers. They just don't make sense. Like, they're not good at using curse words to, you know, to ridicule. They're not able to string them together in eloquent ways. And it basically was along the lines of, you know, prepare to bend over and lube up and, you know, something about change and hope or something stupid. It was just, I can't even say.
And you'll reach in your pocket and hope you've got some change.
Oh, it just sucked about 20 points off my IQ score. It was just really bad. So then, of course, you know, I instead of just pounding this guy into just a bloody mess, which is my first, you know, just it's just my silverback reaction.
Yes.
To just smash.
Lizard brain.
Yeah, I can't help it. Hey, we all have it, you know. But I did fight the impulse, and I didn't. And I kind of started, you know, getting to him. And I was asking him questions, and he said a couple things to me which really just sent me over an edge, and I just literally just had to, I annihilated this guy with, you know, just common sense, you know. But he brought up these bumper sticker slogans that I saw reflected yesterday in a drudge article, but he said something along the lines of, you ever get a job from poor man? And it just amazes me that we live in this world where we're floating through space, spinning around in this galaxy, and their biggest preoccupation is doing things that will give them a job. It's never been so, I mean, it's always been clear to me, but it's never been as clear and as, you know, waking up on the beach after a night of partying with the sun at high noon, you know, bright, that our whole paradigm to this system, and it's coming, and this paradigm's growing, and you could see it everywhere. You know, that's why they're flailing around, but this tree that's growing with this new paradigm for our new world, it's literally, well, listen to Glenn Beck. Listen to, did you hear his scream of horror? Did you hear that?
Yeah, that thing still.
Have you ever heard of,
I've heard a lot of right wing yammerhead radio, Albert. I have never heard anything like that before. I wouldn't be if I tried to. I mean, that guy, his scream was reaching Geddy Lee levels of inaudibility.
Oh, it was. Yeah, fear is the mind killer, and this man is full of fear. That's why that's all they have to sell. That's why when they sit there and they make these articles up about, look at where our stimulus money is being wasted, and they start talking about ham. I don't know if you've seen this yet. They threw this big, huge fit because this, you know, a bunch of different places that, you know, make ham and cheese, essentially. It was mostly ham and cheese that they pointed out as this huge waste, which, you know, basically the ham averaged out to, you know, cold cut ham. I don't know, $1.50 a pound. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
$1.50 a pound? Where do you buy a ham for $1.50 a pound? That's a pretty good deal. I'm not going to say it's quality, but, you know.
If it's ham.
It's edible. Yeah, it's $1.50. I mean, come on. That's a good deal. It's not like they're going out getting boar's head, you know, hickory smoke, freaking, you know, whatever, special ham for $12 a pound or whatever else they try to do. I mean, they got a good deal on it, and they're helping out some companies. No, they're making some cheese, and they need this cheese table, and it costs $200,000. And it was just blowing me away because these guys are sitting here rambling on and prattling on about, you know, government waste, and there's an Air Force base that needs a new hangar door, and it's like $1.5 million. I mean, they're acting like it was like, you know, one of these hollow core, you know, inside pre-hung doors.
Yeah, they could get him a new garage door down to the Lowe's. I seen them on sale for $79.95.
Really? Yeah, well, too bad this one's for...
Got one of them side screw motors? Yeah, that's government waste is what that is.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing that blows me away is these people cheered and hooted and hollered about, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they were the cheerleaders, and they were, oh, we were unpatriotic, and oh, we hated America, and we wanted us to fail because we didn't want to go blow $2 trillion in Iraq. Because when we started getting outraged of price cost plus, you know, hey, boss, we need one drill. Oh, Lord, I'll order 25, but we only need one. Okay, I'll order 40. When we got all outraged about that, where were they? What'd they do? Oh, well, we weapons of mass destruction and all the other nonsense that they tried to flip on us. And I'll tell you, this nonsense doesn't fly anymore. You know, there's a new congressman that came to my attention, and, you know, there are a lot of congressmen, so, you know, unless they're in, you know, right in your face all the time, you never really notice, you know who they all are. I mean, and if you do, hey, kudos to you. But I didn't, and I was actually enlightened to a new man, and this guy happened to be from Tennessee, and it's their representative, Cohen. Hey, do you know?
Steve Cohen from Memphis, yes.
I like him.
Good, smart man. Friend of Warren Zevon, by the way.
I'm not surprised.
You got to figure that anybody that hung out with Warren was not entirely bad. Or entirely sane.
Well, good. We don't need sane. We need coherent and rational and logical people. Sane, you know, they'll try to tell you that, you know, mining coal is sane because we have it. You know, I actually watched, let me just talk about what Cohen actually mentioned Henry Anslinger's name to criticize the war on drugs. I haven't heard that man's name mentioned since 1937 Senate hearings and so forth. He actually literally eviscerated the FBI director Mueller when he tried to say how cannabis causes deaths and all this other stuff. It was just wonderful. It was just awesome and beautiful. And I'll tell you what, I use this as, these are my mayflies. This is what tells me that the water's clean and good, is when we end this war on drugs. That'll show, I mean, common sense is starting to really flow. Whatever damn these Republicans, you know, broke with their, you know, just fumblings and their, you know, idiocy, whatever, of the 8 years of the Bush administration, you know, that put a lot of stress on the dams of have been holding back common sense. And it's, and you know how a dam works, you know, once you get a crack in it, it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then there is no dam. And then it's a big giant flood, and that's what we want to see in this world when it comes to all these issues of just stupidity and this inane regret. aggressiveness that we've constantly just, oh, wasting money and blowing money. I don't want to hear about nobody talking anything bad about any kind of thing that, you know, and these half-assed measurements, you know, that these guys are doing for, you know, buying a little bit of ham and buying a little bit of cheese, and that ain't going to really fix anything. We really need to do some massive, massive, massive stimulus. If we're going to, you know, we have to retool and reconfigure this whole system if we actually want to get anywhere with it. You know what I mean? Like, I watched an interesting documentary last night, and it was, you know, it was a kind of prayer, a little bit. It was talking about what California is having to go through. And I applaud it. I personally, I don't, you know, I know they're all like a bunch of people freaking out. Oh, we're going to destroy our economy and blah, 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 blah. The energy prices are going to get crazy. You know, but it doesn't sound too bad to me. And you know how California leads the way on all these things. And they want to destroy and get rid of all their coal power plants. They want solar panels on 1 million roofs. 1 million. Now, there's probably 30 plus, 40, 50 plus million roofs in this state. So, you know, that's a start. And it is a great start. And it's a start that everybody needs to go. We need to see states competing with each other. We need to see states sitting there and, you know, saying, oh, you guys are going to do 1 million. We're going to do 2 million. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I think, yeah, I mean, you got these guys making these solar panels now out of metal and sprayed on, you know, there's some sort of metallic goop that they spray on and
yeah.
Change it up. And
transparent aluminum or something that Mr. Scott was talking about, yes.
Yeah, oh yeah, we're here, and they're making these things, and it's cheap. They make they make roughly, what'd they say, 100 nuclear power plants, or, yeah, 10 or 100 or something like that a year in terms of how much electric potential output they're actually pumping out of their little tiny factory. I mean, hello? Doesn't that make sense? Why are we going to be sitting here spending $2 trillion in Iraq?
Well, listen, you jumped into something, and I have to interject here. As I mentioned, going down the hill, I was listening to a little bit of the junkie who is the head of America's Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of that... could you stand by just a minute? I've got to go dark for a second. My daughter is calling in, okay?
Oh, well, certainly.
Stand by.
I hope it's okay.
Well, you get them away from home for a couple of hours, and they forget what time Daddy's on the air.
Dad, you want me to pick up some peanut butters and jelly?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. No, but so everything's okay, right?
Oh, yeah, everything's fine. It's just, okay.
Family first.
Well, the separate phone that isn't the studio phone, and you know, when the bat phone rings.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, it's not paranoia, it's parent-noia. But no, what I was gonna say, Albert.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, going down the road, I hear the junkie head of the Republican Party, and he says, "I've got a Newsweek article in front of me here. Power utilities scramble to provide electricity for electric cars."
Really?
And I said to myself, this is going to be good. These wacko environmentalists don't understand that the power for they're going to have 30,000 on the road in Los Angeles. This article, my friends, is all about this one guy who's got an electric car, and people keep stopping him and saying, "What kind of car is that? I want one of those."
The horror.
And there's only going to be 30,000 of them on the road, my friends. And already the power utilities are scrambling to come up with a means of providing electricity for these electric cars because these environmental wackos think that they're being good to the environment by driving electric cars. They don't understand that when they plug it into the wall, they're plugging into coal. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, you're talking about electricity in California, Flush. There ain't just a hell of a lot of coal-fired electricity in California. There's some. We all know about Black Mesa in Arizona, and we know where that pipeline goes to. But there's not a lot, but there's some. And then just going down the road, trying not to scream in front of my children, I'm sitting there listening, and I'm thinking, you know, you short-sighted bastards. Because they don't realize, you know, where's the electricity going to come from for their precious electric cars? Well, it's plug-in electrics are a good idea. And if you're plugging them in overnight, they're not even, as John Fox has pointed out to me, they're not even stressing the grid. But what's more, if we install the solar, if we install the wind, then the electricity is there. Well, the sun, yeah. But you can hear the right-wing response, can't you, Albert? Yeah, but the sun don't shine.
Oh, please. I know.
At night. No, that's when the wind usually blows, dumbass.
Yeah. Well, there's, well, I mean.
I mean, not you. I'm not calling you, you know.
No, oh, absolutely. Oh, I know that. But this is why, you know, there is no one answer to this, you know, to this major problem, you know, to this extinction level event that we're facing in terms of energy. You know, there is no one answer for it. It's a bunch of answers and all kinds of things. I mean, this is how short-sighted these people are, is, you know, they don't even understand, like this is the next solid bubble. This is going to be a Moki marble of sorts. This is going to be planetary in its scope. This is like creating a new planet, an economic model that we're going to be, you know, that we're going to wind up having to, you know, nurture and grow like a chia pet, you know, like the president, chia, Obama, change, you know. It's going to be something that is, you know, man, people looking for jobs. Go get trained in how to install solar panels. Trust me when I tell you. There's so many people I sit there and I hear, oh, well, what should I go do? And what do they tell you? And you know how I feel about this. Oh, well, healthcare is pretty, you know, recession-proof, and it's really not. But let's say, oh, go into healthcare. Now, this drives me just, this makes me pale as can be. I don't want people going into medicine because they want a paycheck. Those people don't make good caregivers. We don't need people that go to jobs just for a paycheck. And if you want just a paycheck and you want to go do something productive for the civilization. Go do something productive for the species. You know, coal in California, is according to the PBS documentary, is around 14% of their production. Well, renewables is around 12. And they're looking to really, really, really amp that up in the, you know, the next decade, which is awesome because that will drop the price for everyone. You know, it will make more places in Iowa, you know, make wind generators. It'll make more places maybe in West Virginia, you know, that they have a big, you know, empty warehouse that they're not making mufflers in that area anymore. You know, it'll make them, you know, retool up and get, you know, some in capital investment for, you know, solar panels. I mean, these are things that every roof in the country. It's like, what is it, Dan Jones? Van Jones, I love him. He's awesome. He came out and said that, you know, we have flat roof from sea to shining sea in this country. That is our Saudi Arabia. And, you know, it is. And when the sun doesn't shine, we'll have wind generation. And, you know, when the wind doesn't blow, we'll also have geothermal energy. There's two trillion.
This is not rocket science. At least some of,
no,
most of it isn't.
No, it shouldn't be. I mean, there's 2 zettajoules of energy in the Earth's crust. 2 zettajoules, Bob. We don't use point.
How many is a zetta? I mean, I'm sorry to be simple, but I understand Gigas and Terras. Is Zeta after Terra?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Zeta's getting into, you know, little white marble, black and white marble notebooks, you know. It's getting into a couple of zeros, you know, one with a couple of zeros of those. I mean, that's, you're getting into, you know, squared orders of magnitude there. It's ridiculous. There's so much energy there. I mean, there's not only so much energy there, there is so much energy. Hey, there's nothing to yell about. There's nothing to yell about. Stop yelling. Oh, my goodness. Oh, God. There's not a mess. You don't got to clean up. Anyhow.
Gotta love them.
You gotta love them. Yeah, go stay in the corner. You throw a fit, corner. I got it. Oh, man. I know. I'm such an Attila the Hun, aren't I?
Parenting teachable moment.
I'm trying. But, you know, no, there's so much energy, and we're swimming in energy. We just have to tap into the right sources. You know, we've been blinded for so many years. I mean, you're going to trust some guy with a pencil-thin mustache and a bolo tie to meet your energy needs? Never trust anybody with a bolo tie. Ever. Ever.
How about the pencil-thin mustache?
No, never. No, I wouldn't leave. I wouldn't. I might have a drink with John Waters, but that's about it. But I'll tell you what. You go look at the guys that try to tell you, oh, there's buildings on Mars and there's aliens there. And
Elvis's face.
They're wearing a freaking bolo tie. So if you got a bolo tie, go throw it away. You don't need it. We don't need to listen to people that try to tell us with this crap. And I've seen Don Blankenship in a bolo tie. That's just bad fashion right there. So you can't trust people like that. You can't sit there and let people like this hold us over the coals. They can't. You know, we can't. You don't trust anybody in it, you know. It's like, it actually reminds me of that, there's actually kind of a funny scene, isn't that Harold and Kumar go to Guantanamo Bay or what have you, and they wind up getting on the plane. And the lady sees him, and, you know, the Kumar guy, he happens to be of Indian origin or what have you, and she turns around and she looks at him, and she has this, you know, flippant fantasy that he's in a turban, and he points at her and goes, woo, to the plane, smashing down the ground. Obviously, he didn't do that, but, you know, she had this, you know, delusion that he did, and that's what caused him to go, that's the whole premise of the comedy. Anyhow, you know, so it's kind of like, you don't trust these guys. If you don't trust them, then why are we sitting here enabling them to build these, you know, energy infrastructures that we're going to be totally reliant upon? I don't know. Bob, you know, I love you, but I breathe for myself, you know?
Yes.
What if you forget to breathe for me? What if you forget? I mean, you know, you got a lot of things on your mind, you know? You got all these different things going down. You don't need to sit here and, you know, basically hamstring ourselves and sit there and, oh, man, my kid just won't stop. She just will not stop. Anyhow.
I understand. No, and that's the thing. I don't want, I got enough trouble thinking for myself. And I don't understand why the sheeple, for lack of a better term, find it so gratifying to let the Fox Newses and the Republican Party and so forth do their thinking for them. If I come across an idea, I don't care which side it comes from, Albert. If I can't subject it to some degree of rational scrutiny and it can't hold water, I don't stand by it.
Exactly. You know, they want to flip out, and this is back into the healthcare thing. You know, they want to flip out about, oh, they want us to have, you know, European healthcare systems in this country. I do. What other country do you know of that can have a 259-car pileup on the almost unregulated highway system in terms of speed with no fatalities? Germany can.
Not us.
No, no one died. There are a couple in critical condition, but there were 259 cars involved in this pileup.
Yeah, I know. I read about it. It's.
Yeah. Hey, they know how to design safe vehicles. That's what the first thing that tells me. You know, and if they put that much thought into their vehicle, like, and if you're going to buy a used Audi, I certainly recommend it. They have this little thing in between the mirror and the top of the windshield that you can flip down when the sun is in that freaking spot that just you can't do anything. You got to move your head. You got to sit like, you know.
Yeah.
You got a back brace. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know. Well, that's what made me buy the vehicle. It was used. But that's why I was like, oh, you, if they thought of that.
Look, until what was it? Up until 1968, the primary advertising slogan of the Volvo automobile manufacturer was, no one ever died in a Volvo. And that's, you know, how many years of manufacturing Volvos?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a combination of how you build your highways, and of course, yep. The right wing would say, well, you know, the Germans ain't got that much highway to maintain. Ain't nothing like our interstate system. That might be it, or it might be that their bases are a lot thicker than ours are. But it's a function of how the roads are designed,
mm-hmm.
how they're built, how the cars are built. And how the drivers are trained.
No, that too.
My daughter, for instance, in the coming school year, being as she is now 15, will take for one semester for about 45 minutes a day driver education, or maybe 6 weeks. And then they'll say, well, honey, go get your learner's permit. And just remember, you fail the driver's test if you don't buckle up first. Huh? What? Meanwhile, I mean, I've got a very, very dear friend who has a German wife, and they commute back and forth. And he has told me, you know, what it takes to drive in Germany. And to get one's license is no small event, neither is it small change. So you've got a nation of people operating motor vehicles who have a real functioning, working understanding of how motor vehicles work. It's so funny you would bring this up, because I had a conversation earlier today on most of the motorways of Europe. The idea, you know, that the German manufacturers were real slow to catch on to the concept of a cup holder. You know, that's the cup holder and the minivan are the most recent contributions of the automobile manufacturing industry in America to automobile design. Or maybe it was the Japanese designed the cup holder and gave it to us because they know how we are. Because I heard it said one time that a German automotive designer would no sooner put a cup holder in a car. What is it that you are wanting to be drinking while you are enjoying the driving experience? You must become one with the automobile. I am still not understanding this radio you want to put in this automobile. Is the Teutonic song of the engine not enough for you?
You know, you're making jokes, but you're making a solid point, because
yes,
they make their vehicles to drive, you know? They make their vehicles to drive. They make their roads to drive on. Like, we make roads. It's the same thing. I mean, it's the same thing we're talking. We've talked about this before. We make roads to rebuild them every year. That's how we make them. I don't care. My neighbor, her dad does his own thing, and I've told him that. I'm like, you guys aren't doing this right. You're not doing it right if you have to do it every year. You know, it's just a simple fact of reality. And I know we have tons of traffic. I would rather not drive on a road until it's ready, and then never have to worry about another little cone or any of these people, you know, working on it or anything. The road breaking my struts or whatever, you know, breaking the belts in my tires because I've got, you know, 5-inch gaps in the concrete. I'd rather not deal with concrete. Oh, yeah, right. When do you see concrete roads anymore? Now it's all blacktop that falls apart once you get a little heat in it or a little cold in it. It just crumbles into little pieces and kicks up into your wheel wells and adds weight to your car, and then you lose fuel efficiency, all that great stuff. And then you got to scrub it off with rubbing alcohol and a little Brillo, not a Brillo pad, but a little.
Yeah, there's a few hours of your life you're never getting back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, and I'm not trying to say anything, but I thought we're America. You know, we're supposed to take the best of the best and the cream of the crop and turn it into, you know, sustainable, or, you know, well, to me it makes sense to have sustainable products, but we make vehicles to, you know, fall apart, and then they wonder why they're, you know, out of business, and we make vehicles, you know, to suck up the most gas and the most interior room, the space you'll never use, you know, and all these other things that we have to have, and, you know, we build roads every year instead of, you know, build it once, you know, inspected here and there, and we build bridges and they fall apart. We do all these things, and it's, you know, it's often, you know, well, why should we do it right? We're going to get the contract to do it again because we bid the least. So, yeah, fill it in with some styrofoam cups. It'll be okay. And then, then you get these potholes that just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And anybody who drives in a city will tell you that. And it's just a horror show. But they also build healthcare systems to heal people. They build cars to actually drive and be enjoyable to drive, and healthcare systems to heal people and not give them a heart attack when they see the bill, or to even just kill them because they're too afraid to get the bill. You know, this happens with us constantly. We just got another bill in the mail. I don't think I told you this. We haven't spoke between then. My wife, you know, she has an infection. Bah, 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 bah. Oh, I think I did. I talked to you about this off the air. You know, we get another bill. You know, it's like nickel and diamond, nickel and diamond, nickel and diamond. I turn around and I can't barely buy pasta because I'm constantly paying health care bills. We're not even that sick. I weep to think of people that really have, you know, that God doesn't like, and I really gives them the lightning bolts of sickness and illness. I weep to think of how these people have to live day to day. Why would you want to inflict that? What kind of sociopath wants to inflict that upon somebody for profit? And then to freaking scream like you're on Guantanamo Bay getting waterboarded because you're wrong. I don't understand how you even look, like people like Glenn Beck look at themselves in the mirror. There isn't enough money.
Oh, you said the magic word. If this wasn't radio, if this was video, there would be a duck dropping from the ceiling. You said Glenn Beck. I got two stories here to drop on you.
Oh God.
Sorry, dude.
I'm all right. I'm here. I'm here. That's what I'm here for, Bob.
No, but that you'd think after that piercing, shrieking scream, he'd go on vacation for a week or something.
Something.
Or maybe if he had a general manager or a program manager, anybody, somebody's got to be above him who would say, you know, Glenn, I think you need a rest, buddy.
You're not looking so good.
Well, it turns out. And this is, you know, file this under the broad heading of the call for civil war in America. Let me back up for a minute. Let's start with Randall Terry. Sorry.
I'm holding on. No, I know. We have to go through this, though. It's like going through.
He made the recent claim with regard to Sonia Sotomayor that, quote, to refuse to filibuster her is to bow down in abject obedience to the angel of death.
It's so stupid. Sorry.
And now comes this. And bear in mind, the same people that listen to Randall Terry listen to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and O'Reilly and, you know, because the right wing is full service. You can't get away from it if you are in its grips. They will message you 24 hours per day.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Randall Terry. The sheer horror and frustration of such an evil policy, forcing Americans to pay for the murder of the unborn in their health care program. That's such an evil policy. The sheer horror and frustration of such an evil policy will lead some people to absolutely refuse to pay their taxes, and I believe, if my reading of history from America and around the world is correct, that there are others who will be tempted to acts of violence. If the government of this country tramples the faith and values of its citizens, huh? Yeah, we're down to that. Having some sort of public option, not even single-payer health care, for God's sakes, some kind of public option, Albert, constitutes the government of this country trampling the faith and values of its citizens. If the government of this country tramples the faith and values of its citizens, history will hold those in power responsible for the violent convulsions that follow. This son of a bitch is calling for more murders. So then we cruise over to everybody's favorite highly paid rodeo clown, Glenn Beck. You know that's what he calls himself, right? I'm a rodeo clown.
Yeah.
he shows up this afternoon on the air, and he has on John Bolton, you know, porn stash guy, wants to kill Iran all the time. And Beck says the following, talking about Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. I'm telling you, this guy is dangerous. He's never lost before. He won't understand it. He won't understand. Look how he is like, who are you to question me? I mean, this guy is practically an imperial president now. When he starts to lose and people start to question him and push him back against the wall, he's not going to know how to react.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They're waiting. They can't wait for the bullets to start flying. And then they'll stand up and they will aggrandize every story and say, it was just some crazy. You can't hold us responsible for inciting all of this. You know, it was hard enough for Rwanda to come back or attempt to come back from the horrors that were the genocide there. But they at least had the stomach to get out of the way while the world put on trial the guys who got behind microphones and encouraged the massacres. In other words, the Rwandans wanted peace in their land and legitimacy in their land more than we do in ours. Because Randall Terry is not going to be visited by the Secret Service for that. And Glenn Beck calling for armed revolution? Nope, not him either. There's a car dealer out there in Missouri, Max Motors. Their business slogan is God, Guns, Guts, and American Pickup Trucks. Come buy a pickup truck at Max Motors, and we'll give you a gift certificate for a free AK-47.
Yeah. That AK isn't going to fuel that vehicle to drive down the road.
No, but the right wing is going to fuel the anger of the guy owning the AK who got it with his truck. So that when he can't put fuel in the truck anymore, not because of any economic policy of any particular political party, but because he's being used as a dadgum fool by the right wing in this country, well, he can go shoot himself up a Unitarian church and feel a little better about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what that Obama Nation shirt-wearing ridiculous moron. Well, he said that quote twice to me about how he would spill his blood. And I would like to think that after me confronting him, that he...
I'm proud of you for doing it.
Well, I can't tell you all the things I said because, you know, there are families listening. But, you know, I always try to come at people from where they are. You know, maybe if you're on a forum or something, I'll come at you in a negative way, but most times I'll come at you in a way that at least lets you empathize. And that is a problem with these people. Like, they're very, you know, they lack empathy for just about anything. And the only kinds of ways that they, you know, the only branch of them that have any empathy, and they waste it on horror, you know, or the anti-abortion crowd. You know, like they'll say, oh, how does the baby feel? And, you know, but that's about as much into the feelings that these kinds of people get. So I always try to make them empathize with everyone else. And, you know, Glenn Beck, you know, they can sit here and they're probably, you know, what's probably really getting Glenn Beck frustrated is that we aren't in civil war yet. That president, not sure, still has, you know, he's hovering near 70. Right? He's high 60s in his approval.
Yeah, and yet, what was the headline, what, Friday? Obama's poll numbers dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's nowhere near the poll numbers of the Republicans in Congress or Dick Cheney or George Bush. Oh, he's still above 50%.
Yeah. Oh, he's way above.
And frankly, the thing that's really if the numbers are actually dropping at all, what's dropping the numbers is the failure to act decisively and come out and say, or get off the pot. We're going to have a public option. We're going to fix health care. And maybe that was a little bit of what went down today. I don't know.
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, and in a way, I'd like to see this incarnation of health care kind of fail. Just hear me out. The reason I would is because I know that we can do a lot better. And I know that it failing will not remove the argument. I mean, even its passing isn't going to end it. It's just like when they decriminalize cannabis for adults to consume. Decriminalization is a bunch of crap because you can have it, but you can't sell it or you can't produce it. But you can have it, and you'll get a $100 ticket. Well, that's bull crap. And people, they'll decriminalize it, but they'll legalize it shortly thereafter because no one's going to want to put up with it. And that's the same thing with this health care. Right, it's an inch, but we're going to come back for the whole nine yards. And I'm not going to end on anything that I'm not going to be satisfied till we literally have the best healthcare system in the world. Not the best healthcare. I'm not happy with that because 99% of us can't afford it. 95% and then heck, 40% right. of us are locked out of it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be proud. I'm not happy with that until it's the whole thing. I mean, we pay for what we pay for already in this country. We should have it. I mean, it's like, they want to just, when it snows out, they just want to, clear out the middle line, so you can see where the lane is.
Right.
Don't cut it. Don't cut it when we're slipping and sliding all over the road into the abyss and there's all these cliffs. This stuff is not going to end. And so they can sit there and talk all they want, but they're just regulating themselves. And I talk to people of all stripes, and they just don't even have it. I even made this guy talk about nothing because he was talking about his, the Illuminati and the New World Order.
Oh, no.
I said, this is what happens. And they're like, I don't believe in the Democrats or the Republicans and blah, 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 and all that other stuff. And, when you got people like Harry Reid and, Pelosi, they kind of give me the heebie-jeebies and, or the Dianne Feinstein. But I'm like, so then you must really love Russ Feingold. And he totally was at a bank. That guy was a Democrat. I'm like, but he's the only one that didn't vote for the Patriot Act. Oh, yeah, he's good. See? So I already put the seed in and cracked it for him. So it's, and these people kind of sit there and, wait a minute. Who is looking out for my own best interests? Who really does care about, you were talking. They got 20 years left to call. 20 years? What are you talking about, your children? What are your children going to do? What are they going to do in 20 years? Screw yourself. What are they going to do? And you got all this mess to clean up. You got 20 years left to call. That should be flashing red lights right there. The trumpet should be screaming at you. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We only got 20 years left of this? How many more mountains are we going to level? And who's going to sit here and clean this up? I mean, these are things that should really wake people up. They talk about, the price of energy is going up. So let's do nothing.
Nothing is good. Yeah.
Do nothing. Yeah, let's do nothing. Let's sit around, use up all the gas, bomb any country that has it, that doesn't want to give it to us. Let's just consume, consume, consume. Oh, we'll be happy with, washing machines that last for 2 years. And, we'll be happy with all that stuff. No need for, they talk about California. California, at least, this is one of those things. As America's energy consumption has gone up, California, due to all the efficiency standards that they tend to
enforce,
they kind of stay at a very, they're the biggest one of the, right, they're the biggest state, most populated, and they just kind of stay in a nice little line. They're kind of flatlined in terms of, and that's a good, you want to be flatlined.
Yeah, but God forbid they of course the knee walking, the knuckle walking mouth breathers of the ditto monkeys, as Bart Kopp calls them. They didn't hear that today. No, they heard that. They heard that. I guess PG&E and California Edison are so stressed out by electric cars that they can't even come up with a way to be able to plug in 30,000 of them.
No, please. And that's the other thing. That's so ridiculous. I mean, those things don't really draw a lot of power. I've done some, you know, reading here and there. You can plug them into, what is it? I think it's a 120. Maybe a 220. Maybe you need to have a 220. But big deal. So does your washing machine. So does your, you know, if you have a range, your range has a 220. You know,
your dryer?
There, you know, your dryer is a 220. I mean, these things, I mean, so what? Big deal, 220. So what? Put some solar panels on the roof. Oh, you know, put, it was actually funny. They showed Ed Begley, and he had this thing, and you haven't seen Garbage Warrior yet, have you?
Yes, I have.
Okay, great. Well, you remember that little unit he built, right, and was powering like 10 homes. They flipped out because he was, you know, providing energy to people for free and all this stuff. That was one of the...
That's more dangerous than growing, illicitly growing peanuts or tobacco.
Oh, yeah, you can't be doing that. But so, you know, he had that unit. And what was the unit? It was like this drum with, like, it was kind of this beautiful shape. And it spun around, you know, horizontally. Instead of, like, a windmill, it was the other way around. And it was caught so much wind that it had to be stabilized, and he had to make a frame around it. Well, anyway, they are actually making these now. You can buy them. They produce, I don't even know, a couple 800 megawatts or 800 kilovolts or kilowatts or whatever. I mean, that's a sizable amount for, you know, I mean, that might not meet all of your energy needs, but that thing will put a dent in your utility bill that it'll pay for itself in 4 years.
Oh.
You know, and it'll be paid off in that time. I mean, so we're talking about, I mean, there's all kinds of things we can do. It doesn't take up a ton of space. It doesn't do anything other than spin. And if you really, you know, if you, there's no wind blowing and the sun ain't shining, you can send the boy on up to the roof and make him spin it with his hand. You know what I mean?
Put Gilligan on the bamboo bicycle.
Get up there, boy. Earn your keep. You know, heck, why not? You know, why? And that would be another nice thing to see. Why can't we see some of these things, you know? You want a health, you know, a little heavy? Maybe we won't see that for another 20 years so they can really make some really beautifully efficient dynamos once, you know, superconductors really come into the fore. But these are the things that we need to research. You know, a superconductor, you put a current to that, Bob, and that current stays there. Almost, it's like that is, you know, if we can ever get a room temperature superconductor, that's our perpetual motion machine.
That's true.
Think about that. I mean, we'll put $10 million. And that's the thing. They flip out over, you know, $10 million of $10 million. What is that exactly? $10 million for the government, and you're
that's like a tenth of an F-20. That's like a tenth of an F-22 or a thousandth.
That's the lug nuts on the F-22 that can't even fly in the freaking rain. You know, we got these stupid weapons that we have no problem throwing trillions upon trillions. Now, you know what? A trillion is 1,000 billions. So that's one way to kind of wrap your head around that. And then a billion is, you know, of course. But, you know, this is the thing. I mean, we're sitting here, 1,000 billions. We'll waste billions upon trillions of dollars on this war machine. And I'm going to say it, my God, I'm going to say it until I see it, everyone saying it. We can do and blow and do this, and I'm not the first one to say it. I know this. It just twists my toes to imagine that people have had to say it for so long. But, my God, why can we blow all this money on the Pentagon? Why do we blow all this money on the Department of Defense? If we could put half or 10% of what we put into the war machine, right? 10%, I guarantee 10% could figure out fusion and get the solar, superconductors. And I mean, just 10%. We blow so much money on this crap, we need to downsize the military. Downsize it. Downsize it to nothing, because nobody's ever attacked.
Well, that's kind of where the founding fathers were. Hey, Albert, I got to roll real quick. The bat phone's ringing again, so I got to throw some music on and take this call.
All right, well, hey, great talking to you, and take care, and we'll chat later. Thanks.
All right, stand by. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
It's our buddy Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. I'm going to put a little music on, and I'll be right back.
We can bomb most any land. On CNN with marching bands. Pour ourselves an ice cold Coke. Make a war. Tell a joke. Yeah. It's all there, all over me. The fear and insecurity. Yes, I am American. From Pearl Harbor to Afghanistan. Now Vietnam is history. And brother, that lesson didn't come for free. The politicians, they didn't bleed. Misguided patriots, indeed, indeed, indeed. Are we an empire? Loose, loose. Can we find a peace that'll last? Is the answer here at home? Home, 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 home. Or is it buried in a foreign storm?
Well, my apologies. Welcome to family life. I'm so sorry about that, but those are calls you have to take. But, yeah, well, welcome. No, really. I don't know what circumstance there could be that where you don't. But everything, for those of you concerned, everything's fine. Everything's all okay, but a thunderstorm blew through the Kanawha Valley, and now it's happening up here. And so my apologies for the silence. Everything is a-okay, but nervous parent syndrome is probably what it is more than anything else. She may be 15, but that doesn't mean we don't fret. It's about 21 minutes before the hour. If you guys didn't hang up on me, let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I just want to answer the previous call. What's his name again?
Yeah.
The previous caller?
Albert, yeah.
Albert, I want to answer this question, why we have so much funds for the defense contractors and all that. I've come to the conclusion that U.S. foreign policy for the past 60 years has been built on neo-Calvinistic racism.
I would probably pull it up, extend that longer than any 60 years, but yeah, go ahead.
Because think about who ends up getting wounded from these bombs and missiles and weapons that, you know, are being made for the most part.
I mean, look at the power elite families in this country.
Yeah.
You know, before the First World War, and I mean, this is not exaggeration, before the First World War, Kevin, the Bush family was next to nothing.
Oh, yeah.
But then a member of the Bush family was put on the War Materials Procurement Board, and I mean they latched on to the federal teat with steel-trap jaws.
Exactly.
And they have never let off it.
Yeah, they were upper-middle class, but they weren't wealthy.
Yeah, they were respectable, but yeah. Or well, that's probably the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, they were middle class, but they were, you know. It's just, I don't know. And the thing is, I really hope, and, you know, it's against my better interest to mention this, but the Republican Party realized how the Bushes ruined their party.
Do you think that, I mean, has that light gone on for them?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Because I know as sure as the sky is blue, Death is going to run for Senate or President.
Well, he's going to run for the Senate in 10, and then using the Obama model, he will be ready to run for President in 12.
Yeah.
And he'll say, well, look at all the experience I've got. I've been a governor and a senator.
Mm-hmm. And people are going to fall for it like hook, line, and sinker.
Sadly, I think you're right. And that's what I said earlier. If there's any dissatisfaction with Barack Obama, Kevin, it is that he has not been proactive enough. He hasn't really taken his message to the streets. You know, all this talk of a public option, you know, BS. We want a taxpayer-funded healthcare system, and you know, if the idiots out there want to pay and let somebody profit by their sickness and feed their avarice by their misery and their anguish, cool, let them.
But the thing is, it's just, I think part of it too is my heart of hearts. I'm like, he can only do so much because homeboy wants to stay alive.
Do you really think that motivates him? I mean,
these people will kill. Look at hell, you know, it's strange. Every halfway decent human senator this country ever has ends up dying tragically in a plane accident.
Yeah, but at least now he's got Air Force One and there's no excuse.
No.
But I, you know, I, there's, look, unless Dennis Kucinich comes out in the 2012 race, which I really can't imagine under the circumstances, and runs against an incumbent Democrat, I can't imagine anybody running against Barack Obama, so he's going to be the nominee. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who have already washed their hands and said, hell no, 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 I got this, I've been suckered for the last time. But when you get right down to it and the Republican nominee is a Bush-Palin ticket?
Oh, Palin isn't going anywhere. Palin, at best, Palin got a job at Fox News with some right-wing thing. She is her political career is there.
But, you know, pick somebody. You know, Bush Gingrich.
Oh, no, it could be Bush and probably somebody who's like a more moderate Republican, you know. It could be Bush and our parent coach from Connecticut there.
Lieberman?
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking maybe Bush Lindsey Graham?
Nah. Nah, that's not a winnable ticket.
Nah,
Lieberman? Bush Lieberman.
No, but remember, John McCain was painted as a moderate. Any Bush is always going to run as a moderate, no matter how hard, weird right-wing they are. So they're going to have to pick somebody for the red meat base. And so a Bush Tom Coburn, Bush Jim DeMint, Bush Jim Inhofe, Bush Bobby Jindal, Piyush Jindal.
Yeah, that would make sense too. Or it could be Bush and what's his name, who runs the party now, Michael Steele.
Nah, he's proving himself to be far too much of an idiot.
Well, most vice presidents are.
Well, you know the Bush. Well, you got you're one for one with the Bush family because you got Dan Quayle on the one hand. When I went to Latin America, I realized I should have spent more time studying Latin. And then on the other hand, you've got the personification of evil itself in Darth Cheney. Yeah. No, I like Bush Piyush Jindal for one very good reason. Because on the one hand, Bush will trot out his wife, Columba, and say, see, we're... Hispanic vote needs to come back to us because, see, I love them so much, I married one.
Well, that was a marriage of convenience, you know.
And then you get Piyush Jindal on the other hand, and you don't get any more freaky fundamentalist than him. I mean, this is a guy who goes to exorcisms and writes about them.
But I don't think those numbers are big enough anymore to really win anything. I honestly believe the fundamentalist Christian community has totally, you know, lost any legitimacy because they've been caught so many times with their pants down. You know, it's like, and at the end of the day, you know, these people are like, at the end of the day, people want food in their stomachs. And I keep on, you know, and I guess... That's the problem with being a Democrat, because you figure people are rational. They want, you know, bread and butter issues.
Well, but, you know, what are those bread and butter issues? We've still got a collapsing economy.
Yeah.
Despite Goldman Sachs' record profits. Ha ha, it was all on y'all, suckers. But look, healthcare. And I hate to say it because I was so and remain so vociferously against these disastrous wars in these remote corners of the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare has taken front and center, and the American people in it by more than 70% want some kind of public option.
Oh yeah.
Now I mean I got to be realistic. 70% of the American people are not crying out with one voice for single payer. I wish to God they were, because that would solve the problem.
Everything. Just make Medicare available to everyone.
Yeah. 2.5, 3% overhead, boom, done.
Yeah. And but you see.
They come back with that same talking point, Kevin, about how, well, you know, healthcare is 7%, 17% of the, it's 29% of the economy. Well, what economic fool let it get to be that?
Yeah.
But Obama's out there today, and then, you know, bless his heart, he very gently said, you know, listen to them. They're turning this healthcare debate into a debate on an attempt to destroy me politically? This isn't political. This isn't about breaking me. This is about families being broken.
Well, the thing is, it's the same card he played last year. When he said, well, you know, my name doesn't sound like the other presidents. I have a weird name and so on. And, you know, I don't look like the rest of those guys in the portrait. And then he told him, look, it's not about me. And that's when I knew he was going to win. That and when, you know, McCain basically, you know, which is probably the most decent thing McCain ever did in Minnesota. Can't deny that.
Well, no. I sometimes think, Kevin, the politics don't even matter, okay?
Well, it's about power. It's about...
And it's about the maintenance and preservation of that power. Exactly.
The maintenance of the status quo. And the thing is, you know, when you said earlier in the program, well, it's better to do something than do nothing. Yeah, for the people who are not interested in the status quo, but those who are, doing nothing is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, theirs is the opposite end of the spectrum. It's the old thing about Joseph Papp looking at the method actor in Shakespeare in the Park saying, damn it, man, don't just do something, stand there.
Yeah.
We've got, on the one hand, make something happen, and on the other hand, we've got don't just do something, stand there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, look. Is there anybody out there in corporate America that can't see that the Ben Nelsons and Mary Landrews and Blanche Lincolns and David Pryors and Robert Byrds and Nick Rahals are about as corporate as they're ever going to get? And look, they've all got D's after their names. So, you know, this is about, you know, we can call it red meat politics, we can call it whatever we wish to, but in the final analysis, this is about exactly what you said, maintaining the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this fight is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the thing is, for them, people, like I said, poor people, desperately poor people, don't question, don't ask deep philosophical questions.
No, we're far too consumed with asking the existential questions. Like, do we eat tomorrow? What happens when the car breaks down and I can't get to work?
Okay. And that hence keeps them in a state of power.
Yes.
With very little effort.
Oh, by the way, you've just opened a door, Kevin. The we've got early voting on the Horn presidential poll. News Ninja Gene has $20 on Bush Romney for the Republican nomination.
Oh, no, Romney's too weird. Mormons, even though they're good Republicans, they're not mainstream enough.
Yeah, see, that's why I think I've got something here with Jeb Bush and Piyush Jindal.
Yeah, I can see that more than Romney. Romney isn't going anywhere politically.
No, I think he's a hedge fund manager forevermore now.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, because Mormons, like I said, they're good Republicans, but, you know, Pentecostal Christians or the Baptists, they want their monopoly.
Well, yeah, and it's going to be. Look, do you remember when they asked Dennis Kucinich during the presidential pageants, asked him if he'd ever seen a UFO? What's going to happen if you finally get around to asking Mitt Romney if, as an elder or whatever, stakeholder or whatever of the Mormon Church, if he believes that when he dies he goes to planet Kolob? And Gene's right there. He says, I'm sticking with my pick.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll have to make a note of that. Oh, yeah, and this, now see what you've done, Kevin. You brought out the smart aleck contingent in the chat room. our buddy Spike. I say Pat J. Buchanan and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III for 2012.
Oh, I would say that, too.
You know what? They'd take Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, Tennessee and Florida and Louisiana.
Wait, back up a bit. You think Georgia is that?
Yes, I think Georgia. Yeah, anything that's not Atlanta, you're darn right.
Well, Georgia is a creepy state outside of Atlanta. But
remember, it is the largest state in terms of square miles on the east side of the Mississippi. There's a whole bunch of knuckle walkers in Georgia.
But I figure, you know, Atlanta is where all the money is. You think it would be a Democratic state.
Well, it was, you know, before that whole little unpleasantness with civil rights.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta remember Lester Maddox was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Just like George Wallace. Just like Strom Thurmond.
Can you tell me the people outside of Atlanta have that much political clout?
Numbers.
There's that many more people outside of Atlanta than there are inside Atlanta?
There are enough that as long as you give them, you know, tell them that you're voting. Well, and you go, never underestimate the power of the pulpit, Kevin. When you go to church, as many days as it's open and every time you walk in, there's a fundamentalist evangelical minister sitting there saying, and remember, when you go to the polls, I don't want to violate our tax-exempt status. I'm not telling you who to vote for. But praise Jesus, when you go into that voting booth, think about the unborn babies.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You know, the Baptist church has a monopoly there.
And remember, those people are inside Atlanta, too. No, Atlanta can never turn Georgia.
Oh yeah,
and I think Malloy would tell you the same thing, and he lives there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. One thing is true though. Even within the black community, you do have those hardcore Baptists that are Republican.
Oh gosh, yes.
And you know, it's like that. You know, I had a former boss that was that way.
Hey, you got to remember that the you remember Dr. King founded the Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
Yeah.
Well, they just...
He was Republican.
Well, but the SCLC just ran off the head of its Southern California chapter because he came out and said, there is no way that I'm going to... that I oppose marriage equity.
Oh, yeah.
And he got run by Dr. King's organization.
Yeah, so, and Dr. King, and the sad thing, Dr. King was a huge supporter of gay rights. Coretta Scott King.
Oh, Coretta was as clear could be on that issue.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and this is the problem I have, and I may cause a lot, you know, being that I'm of an immigrant background, but my experience in the South, I often found just as much discrimination from African Americans as I did white folks. And that's a sad thing.
Well, it is indeed.
Okay, because, and I just think it goes back to, you know, like, they just can't wait. They just want a power share amongst themselves, but like, because I'll never forget the scariest night of my life was spending a night in Savannah.
Oh, I can imagine that.
Okay, and because they had basically black and white gangs united, and who they're going around attacking Mexicans and East Indians.
Why am I not surprised?
So I guess that is progress in Southern Tennessee.
Kevin, I got to roll on. We're fresh out of time. Good to hear from you, though, brother.
Oh, okay, you too, bro.
All right, take care now. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from New York City, our buddy Kevin. Hey, I've only got a second or two. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, good evening.
Hey, David.
Yeah, I just wanted to say briefly to Kevin from Brooklyn. I had a whole bunch of stuff that I was going to talk about, but I'll end this on this note. The Christian Coalition will never, ever, ever be put down. And as we're speaking, Ralph Reed, you know, a lot of people think of them as zombies. I think that's incorrect. They're like Terminator 2000, 3000s. And 4,000 models. They are completely programmed and ready to terminate and exterminate at any will. And when I say this, Kevin, listen, when I say this, Ralph Reed is a danger to this country, and the fact that he's rebuilding his Christian coalition, everyone listening should pay attention when I say rebuilding Christian coalition.
Yeah, isn't it supposed to be a newer, hipper Christian coalition?
Right. Right, they're rebuilding it. So don't ever say that they're done, because they're never done, Kevin. Never. Ever, ever. The church will always reign supreme, and all we can do is just take our losses and hope we can make it in the future. That's all I got to say.
Good deal. Well, good hearing from you, David. We got to roll, brother.
All right, later.
All right, and we'll get to the rest of it tomorrow or the next day, okay? Don't give up on the stack.
Okay.
All right, bye now.
All right.
Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. Hey, we are fresh out of time. Sorry about the time away from the microphone, but welcome to real family values. You know what I mean? I think you do. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold and Ben Birch. Thanks to all the moderators and bloggers and news ninjas who make all of this go. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch, the bravest, hardest working people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Better late than never! It's the Monday edition of Head On. I'm Bob, and I'm 3 minutes late. But you know what? I'm glad to be here. And why am I late?
Hey, you're late. Why are you late?
Well, the fact of the matter is, we just walked in the door. I mean, just walked in the door. I had forgotten about it, but today was Take Margie to Camp Day. And so we went down to Charleston and dropped her off for the Democratic Youth Leadership Academy. She'll be there for a few days, and she'll get some good political rah-rah going on. That's her second year there. And I think overall it's a positive for her. Coming back up the mountain, we heard weird noises coming out of the truck, which we could not immediately identify or diagnose, so that will be something that we get to dig into at some point later in time. But anyway, that's why we're a couple of minutes late getting into the room. What's on your mind today? I know what's on mine. I know where I want to start this. And frankly, it's gonna take a little help from you because I've been on the road for the last handful of hours, and I know what is sort of under my what the burr is under my bonnet, the bee under my bonnet, the burr under my saddle. I know what those are. The question is, what about you? What is on your mind? And you are welcome to bring anything along that you wish. But I want to start with a couple of things that I did not get to last week. And it's gonna take a minute or so, just a second to find it. And hopefully it'll pop right up here. I want to share with you an email that came from our buddy Scott in Sweden regarding healthcare. And I'm going to have to search for it again. It'll take just a second. He wrote a letter, Scott did, regarding health care. You know, Scott, as noted, lives in Sweden. He is American by birth. He is, similar to several other of our listeners, an expatriate American. An American who loves his country, but just doesn't feel like he can live here right now. And in the course of one of our conversations about health care, Scott responded by copying me on a letter that he sent to his former senators in Kansas. And this particular letter is addressed to Senator Brownback. And he copied me in. He says, "Hi, Bob. Well, you inspired me again to write my senators, and what a pair they are, Brownback and Roberts. While not exactly Cheney's flying monkeys, they are his winkies. You know, the green-faced castle guards with the seven barbed spears who cornered the Dorothy gang on the castle battlements. Yes, and one of whom was Buddy Ebsen. Wasn't he the lead winky? Isn't he the one who hollers 'All hail Dorothy' at some point? Because he was supposed to play the Tin Man, but the magic, makeup reacted with his skin, and therefore, but anyway." But this is what Scott sent along to Senators Roberts and Brownback. And I think you're going to appreciate it. Scott writes, "As an aging expat Kansan living in Sweden, I have more experience than I would prefer to have with any healthcare delivery system.
Yet, thank God, it's the Swedish universal coverage single-payer insurance system and not that chaotic roulette wheel system back in the U.S. where the house always wins. Our system has only a 2.5% administrative overhead, while the U.S. averages 30%. There is no pre-existing condition nonsense here, the purpose of which is to deny care to the sick and needy. Our treatment outcomes are among the best in the world and are provided at about half the cost to the patient society. No one is driven to personal bankruptcy due to catastrophic health costs, and no one puts off early disease detection treatment due to lack of means. There are no waiting lists for acute care and reasonably short waiting lists for elective or non-acute care. Pharmaceuticals and medical products are contractually purchased in bulk, which lowers their cost. Generic substitution is encouraged, but the patient has the final choice. In short, the Swedes have had this system since around World War II and have fine-tuned it quite well to be low-cost, but efficient and innovative. As I approach my 60s, I would never even consider returning to the U.S. because of how patient-unfriendly U.S. medical insurance is. By all appearances, the U.S. insurance and medical care system is primarily about bottom-line corporate profit, with actual medical care delivery secondary to that, whereas here, good medical care is seen as a basic human right